much about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
Damn it! I have got a serious case of the Mondays.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
Hurry up with my damn croissants.
Give the man some croissants, will ya?
Tebow.
Would you please stop doing that?
Tebow.
I'm asking you as a man to stop this immediately.
Tebow.
Please stop. Please find a way to stop.
Tebow.
Why do you have a monkey? It's an animal that looks like a dude. Why don't I have 10 of them?
And now...
What is the monkey doing? Tell me what the monkey's doing.
He ripped your face off!
Our feature presentation.
And that's why you don't have 10 of them.
God, no. That was the most horrifying incident ever.
It might have been. Ugh. Hey, party people, welcome on into yet another all-new Kevin and Bean show, this time for a Monday morning. I believe it is the 24th of June. Lisa, how was your weekend?
Well, it was my birthday weekend.
Yes, it was.
Great. Went to the Ivy for dinner. I got a new
very fancy
iPad because I asked for it, because that's how I am.
Did you get anything from me indirectly?
Yes, I did. Got a lot of penis pictures.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Bean.
A lot of
penis pictures. Yeah.
Well, it is kind of a tradition with the K-Rock listeners is on Lisa's birthday, you email her penis photos, right?
And I mean, some of them trick me. Like one wrote, look, I found your dog. So, of course, I had to click on that.
Even though your dog isn't missing, you fell for that
well,
old
Well, I just
stuff.
Figured it was a lookalike, you know? And then, but that one was impressive, so I didn't feel too bad about that.
Okay. Well, that is, let's face it, that is the plan. That's
I'm pretty good with the penises.
Yes, you are, Lisa.
So thanks, Bean.
A lot of people asked, hey, why don't you guys call QVC for Lisa's birthday anymore? But they won't go on the radio with us anymore. They kind of killed the bit. All
yeah,
those years,
right.
we called QVC. Now, all of a sudden, they've got some change of management where they don't let you go on the air, even though we, you know, really do call and buy whatever's on the screen, sight unseen for you. We always pay for it. We always buy. It's not like we're wasting their time or anything. But they won't let us do it anymore, so you're just going to have to settle for penis photos now from now on, I guess.
This is your substitute.
Yes.
All right.
Hey, and you're welcome.
Okay.
and it's not too late to go ahead and send those if you missed the word out on Twitter yesterday.
I'm good.
Well,
that's what she said.
You can always use some new ones. Who watched Beermog? I know you were watching Nick Walenda walking across the Grand Canyon last night.
I was holding my breath every step.
That was awesome. He's amazing.
I felt a little bit... Ordinarily, I wouldn't probably care about something like this, but I felt a little bit invested because we had Mr. Walenda in here last month.
Yes, yeah.
And
me
I
too.
Thought, I liked him, and I do not want to see him die. So I tuned in, and it was not easy to do. That's a long-ass way. That's 23 minutes out on a 2-inch wire walking across, you know, certain death 1,500 feet below if you fall.
Do you want your dad talking in your ear while you're doing that?
No. I wanted... Look, I wasn't even walking across the Grand Canyon. I wanted the old man to shut the F up. And I know he was trying to distract him, but the most... Well, there was one surprising part that I guess I didn't anticipate from the walk yesterday.
Thank you, Lord. Yes, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Calm those winds in the name of Jesus. He has no hold on me. Thank you, Lord. Yes, Jesus. That's my King. Praise you. Praise you, Jesus.
How many shout-outs to God were there in the 23-minute walk?
There were many. More than Tebow.
More than Tebow. And we may have to talk about this later, but is it his mantra? Is that what it is? Is it just he needs something to focus on, or does he believe for reals that you know, Jesus is watching and is controlling whether he falls or not. Is it an actual prayer so that the last thing on his lips before he dies, if he falls, is going to get him in good to heaven?
I think it's genuine. I think it's way more than a mantra. I think every second that he's up there and he's not falling, he's thanking Jesus.
Thanking Jesus. Have you ever heard anything like that, though?
No.
I mean, except
Born again
for when-
church.
Except for when you're having sex. Who says, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, that much?
Yes, Lord. Keep me calm. Lord, help me to relax, Father. Christ's holy name, Lord.
Would you want your little kids watching in case you did die? Wouldn't that just scar them for the rest of their lives?
I didn't think he was going to let his kids watch.
They were all there. They met him at the finish line.
Oh, wow. I would not.
I have many questions about that walk. And how does a doofus like that get such a hot wife is another question I have.
He's a Walenda.
What'd you think, Muggs? Were you amazed, impressed?
Yeah, I mean, like you said earlier, we had a little bit of invested in it. And yeah. I thought, you know, if he would have fallen, it would have been my fault because I shook his hand. It would have been my fault that I killed him. So I'm glad.
Everything bad that happens in the world is your fault.
Right.
That is actually true.
Yeah, so I'm glad.
The world is the worst place for you being in it.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for that. But I'm glad he made it. I'm glad he made it.
Yeah, considering as we discussed when Mr. Walenda was in here, he's lost so many family members over the years who have done ridiculous stunts like this and have fallen to their death. So I'm glad that that one is not added to the list.
Yes.
So.
Yay.
Good times. All right, let's talk about today's all-new Kevin Amin Show, shall we?
I don't know how people like you do it.
One word after another, my friend. Well, Harvey Levin from TMZ.com is on the phone with us this morning. He's got a lot of explaining to do about how he has the uncensored version, we think, of Kate Upton riding topless on a horse, and he is not sharing it with the internet.
Or just us.
That's unacceptable.
We're his friends.
Exactly. Talk to Harvey about that. Also, very, very funny Irish comedian Dylan Moran is in studio with us today. He's got some upcoming shows at the Largo. This guy has conquered Europe. Now he's working on America. He's definitely worth your time. He'll be here in the 7 a.m. hour. Trent Reznor in studio with us at 8 o'clock.
Wow.
Talking about the new Nine Inch Nails tour, talking about the new album coming out. Got a chance for you to qualify for an amazing prize today to go see the band at Staples Center. Not till November, but you get a private helicopter ride to the show, a suite at the Marriott, best seats in the house. We'll talk more about that, give you a chance to qualify for that. Trent Reznor on the program today. Plus, Ralph's got the showbiz beat, and he's next right here on K-Rock. What's the Walking Dave like in there today, Ralph?
The Walking Dave? He's all right. Yeah. He's pretty perky. Considering.
Oh, is he? Yeah. Okay. Because wasn't he in Las Vegas from 1 hour after the close of Friday's show until 1 hour ago?
Yes, he was. He was there for OCD or ODM or OMD.
What I think you got
EDC.
It.
EDC. EDC. CDC.
CDC.
Center for Disease Control.
That's what he looks like he needs right now. It's Monday morning here on the world famous K-Rock. Ralph Garman joins us like he do at this time every hour for a look at the showbiz beat. What's going on?
Before I get the showbiz news for a Monday morning, I'm going to give you something because I love you. This is a movie that I've been looking forward to seeing since I heard about the casting. I said, yes, count me in for The Lone Ranger.
Yeah!
Okay.
Can't wait for this film. I have got passes to a very special K-Rock screening of The Lone Ranger that happens July the 1st at the AMC Century City Theater. Lone Ranger, of course, is in theaters on Wednesday, July the 3rd, to capitalize on the big 4th of July weekend. But I'm so excited about this film, and you know how I love me some superheroes. And The Lone Ranger has been around forever, since the good old days of radio. And then many incarnations on television, animated, several feature films. And this is the latest incarnation of the masked man and his Indian companion, Tonto. And I can't wait to see this film. I'm not going to just give them away. I got 5 pairs of tickets. You're going to have to earn them. The Lone Ranger, to the best of my knowledge, was the first superhero that was related to another superhero.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So if you can tell me what other famous superhero
Abramson?
Farrah was not involved in this at all, Kevin. What other famous superhero was the Lone Ranger's great nephew? Then you're going to score a pair of passes to see the screening for the Lone Ranger on
great
July
question.
1st. 1-800-520-1067. What was the name of the Lone Ranger's great nephew? Just the question.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
No, Kevin, shut up. As expected, the debut of Monsters University was the big box office winner this weekend. As we look at ticket sales, Monster University, in its debut weekend, earned $82 million.
Wow.
Everyone thought its biggest competition would be World War Z, and it was, but it wasn't that close. $66 million for the debut of the new Brad Pitt zombie movie.
Now, is that disappointing or about what we were expecting for Brad Pitt's movie?
They're expected about that.
Okay.
In fact, Paramount happy enough with the numbers to have already greenlit a sequel for World War Z, so we're going to have another one of those. World War Z had the best opening for a live-action film on this particular weekend since Avatar.
Okay.
That's for an original live-action film. This is something that's a, you know, not a sequel or a previous project from another source or something. So that's good news, even though this was a book. Man of Steel was third with $41 million. This is the End, and Now You See Me rounded out the top five. Fast and Furious 6 was sixth. The Internship, The Purge, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Iron Man 3 rounded out your top 10. Tragic news over the weekend. Tanning mom's in rehab. Yeah, tanning mom Patricia Krenzel. She's in rehab for alcohol.
As long as it keeps her off the beach topless, I'm for it.
Yeah, that was not good for anybody. She had to be placed into detox for 30 hours last week when flight attendants turned her away at the gate at Minneapolis for being too drunk to fly. And so she thinks that maybe she has a little alcohol problem. She's going to get herself a little help.
Okay.
It's Tan Mom.
Hey, Tan Mom.
Bitch.
Like, what the? Reportedly, she got the advice to get into rehab from Michael Lohan. They're friends.
Oh, no.
You want to know why?
Yes.
They attended high school together.
Oh, really?
They're not just, no, they're
like
just
celebrity weirdos. No. Oh, my gosh.
They're high school friends.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that something?
Boy, she does look terrible then if she's the same age as Michael Lohan.
She's 45. 45 years old.
Oh, didn't we all think she was at least in her 60s?
Well, yes. Look what she's done to herself. Look at her skin just taking a beating.
Yeah.
Porn star Kim Kardashian.
And put your top back on. I can't emphasize that enough, Tanning Man. Yes. We don't need that.
Absolutely. You accidentally called her Tanning Man right now. And I know that's wrong, and yet it's more accurate than Tanning Mom is. Actually.
It's Tan Mom, bitch.
Well, she said it, not me. Porn star Kim Kardashian's in the news. Is Kanye West about to make an honest woman out of her? As if that's possible. Well, rumor has it that he proposed right after the birth of North. Gave her a black diamond ring.
Of course.
Of course it was. Worth almost $750,000. Word is they're likely to tie the knot this September in Paris, if all goes according to plan.
So, I don't know if you can bet on something like this in Las Vegas, but I feel like he is more likely to never see her or that child again than to marry her.
I think it's a coin flip between those two options. That's how I feel. Governor Chris Christie of the state of New Jersey is taking a little heat because today all the flags in the Garden State will fly at half-mast to honor James Gandolfini, the late soprano star that was, a Jersey guy and a big proponent of that state. It's an executive order that the governor put out there, and a lot of people are saying it's inappropriate because he was just an actor. He wasn't a head of state. And he wasn't
I wondered about that,
politician.
Too.
However, there is some precedent for Governor Christie doing this before. He also ordered New Jersey flags lowered after the deaths of Clarence Clemens, saxophonist for the E Street Band, and Whitney Houston, another famous Jerseytonian. I'm not sure.
It is unusual, but I don't think I have a problem with it. I think I feel like the governor should have the discretion to do something like that if he thinks it's appropriate. And it's hard to argue with any of those.
And also, it's just a flag being lowered a little bit. Everyone relax. He's not naming a bridge after him or giving a big check to anybody. It's just a symbolic gesture. So everyone breathe.
The only thing I will say, you know, with Whitney Houston, though, you're honoring this woman who, you know, died of a drug overdose. You know,
I
can
see
how
people. The honor is more, I think, for her body of work,
her career,
than for the bad way she went. Because let's face it, nobody goes good. And George Clooney, you know, I love the Clooney dog.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, I believe that we are destined to become BFFs. We just haven't met yet.
I know you would like that.
And I largely think he's perfect, but he does have one weird habit. I was surprised by this. According to Star Magazine, he wears all of his socks only once.
He's like Kevin.
Yeah, exactly.
With his underwear.
Kevin,
his underwear. He does it with his socks. Really?
He wears his socks only once, and then after washing them, donates them to a homeless shelter.
What?
Which is an honorable way to dispose of barely used socks.
What's
but his why would you do that
thing? Yeah, what's going on there?
I'm just guessing, and I am guilty of this myself. I love the feel of new socks, new socks, especially like athletic socks or sweat socks. When they're fresh and they're cushy and comfortable and everything, just like giving your feet a hug.
Right.
But do they lose it after one washing?
They do lose it after some washing. Well, not after one, but after a while they start to get, you know, less comfy. Some, yeah, maybe he's got the money and the wherewithal to be able to wrap his feet in comfort constantly.
He must have a sock room.
He must have a sock room. Or he's got one person whose job is just to go out and buy him new socks every
Quite
day.
Possible.
Imagine. I have to go down to Target again. Gotta get Clooney some new socks.
Imagine buying hundreds of pairs of socks a year.
It's craziness, isn't it?
It's weird.
Do we have an answer to my trivia question? I think Paul on line one was the first person through with the correct answer. Paul?
Yes, it's Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet, that's right. The Green Hornet is the grand nephew, or great nephew, I guess, or great grandnephew. I don't know. Anyway, he's related to the Lone Ranger.
I had no idea.
It's true, Lisa. You know why? You know why they're related?
No.
Because the same guy who created the Lone Ranger for radio, that program, also created the Green Hornet.
Okay.
So he made his two heroes related. Congratulations, Paul. Hold on, we're going to give you all the details, but you're going to see a very special K-Rock screening of the Lone Ranger. All right, congratulations to you.
Matt, nice chatting with
so
you.
Excited.
Matt C., Armando, Matt G., and Enrique are also
so many chicks.
I will be giving away Lone Ranger tickets all week long, so stick around. Not all week. It would be hard to do. You just sat there listening to radio all week long. But, you know, come back and see us, won't you? Today's celebrity birthdays. Drummer Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac is 66 years old today. Actor Peter Weller, probably still best known, I guess, as RoboCop, right?
Mm-hmm.
66 years old. Kurt Smith. Bassist for Fears, Tears for Fears, is 52 years old. Actress Mindy Kaling is 34. Anybody loving her show, The Mindy Project?
I do. I love her.
You're loving it?
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't love it. I think it's okay. I think she's very talented, though.
I do, too. Model Petra Nemkova, 34 years old today. Actress Minka Kelly is 33 years old today. And Solange Knowles, little sister of Beyoncé. She's 27 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
There's Late Daft Punk here on the world-famous K-Rock. They did a 20-minute interview with our friend Ted Stryker. You can hear the whole thing at krock.com if you are so inclined. That's a lot of Daft Punk, but some people will be into that. Hey, Harvey Levin from TMZ.com. My friend, how was your weekend?
It was very good. How was yours, guys?
Good.
Doing fine. Kevin's on vacation this week, but we're delighted to have you. Hey, are we
Am
living
like
in a world...
substitute for Kevin?
Yeah, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Wow.
So you better start drinking, Harvey, so you can fit in. You sound way too sober and awake at this hour of the morning. So do we live in a world, Harvey, where if you said the N-word in 1986, you lose your job in 2013? Is that what it's come to now?
See, that's why I like you guys, because you guys get it. She's getting screwed. I mean, this is ridiculous. Paula Deen is an older woman from the Deep South, and you know what? She needs sensitivity training. She needs education. But I don't think Paula Deen's an evil, hateful woman. I mean, I think she's a woman who just never quite... got up with the times. And, you know, I don't think if somebody is lagging behind in terms of sensitivity, you automatically fire them and tar and feather them. And I think that's what happened to her. I mean, I don't think she's a racist. This is 30 years ago she made this confession. It's crazy.
How did this all come out?
Yeah, for folks who haven't been following the story, how was this revealed unto the world, what she did back in 1986?
She's being sued by a woman who worked in one of her restaurants. And the woman is saying, you know, Paula Deen's staff and everybody, they were making all sorts of crude jokes, including racial. And in the deposition, she said that in 1986 she got robbed when she was a bank teller by two guys who were African Americans, and they said, did you ever use the N-word? And she said, well, not to their face. And she said, well, when? And she said, do you ever use the N-word? And she said, well, of course. And, I mean, the fact that she said, of course, means she just doesn't understand. And
right.
Then she said, yeah, I didn't use it to the face. I used it when I was recounting the story to my husband. So that was it. And I think the fact that she said, of course, just shows that just in terms of how she grew up, you know, her great-grandfather owned slaves. You know, this is an evolutionary process for a lot of people. You don't go from 0 to 60.
I have my father's side of the family is from Kannapolis, North Carolina, Harvey. And I, as a boy, spent a lot of time with my grandparents, with my aunts and uncles down there. It was a very common word to be used. And this was, in the 70s, this was a very common word that people still used.
I will defy anybody listening to tell me that you have not had an older relative, a grandfather, even a father, who used words that are now found abhorrent
yes.
in your family.
Yes.
And everybody's been through this. And what it is, it's an evolutionary and generational kind of thing where over time, you know, you learn not to do it. You learn why it's bad. And for some, listen, I remember when I was in law school, I went to law school at the University of Chicago in the Midwest, and I met people there in the Midwest who had never met a Jew before. And I remember they were talking about things, and they were saying, "Oh God, that guy Jewed me down." And I remember thinking, "Oh my God!" And I sometimes I would say something to them, and they didn't have a clue that it was bad.
Right. It was a total surprise.
I'll
give one more example just to use it in my own life. Much more recently, it wasn't uncommon even on this show as a joke 15 years ago for Kevin or I to say the word fag. It just was a word that people used back then. Society has changed. The evolution of that word has changed. We now understand that it's hurtful to people. Nobody uses that word anymore, and I think we're a better society for it. But that's where people were at the time.
And you know what? And one more thing. And look who lagged behind in that arena. Athletes that remember Kobe Bryant used it as recently as six, eight months ago
on the court,
and then he suddenly said, "You know what? I realize this is wrong, and he's not going to do it anymore." So some people, you know, and depending on the word, depending on the group, whatever, you know, depending on where you live, you know, some people, you know, catch on faster than others, but that doesn't make them hateful and evil.
Right, exactly. Language changes, society changes. What's commonplace today may sound weird 20 years from now. So this Paula Deen, she has lost an empire, right? I mean,
She's lost an empire.
She had two shows on the Food Network. She's been fired, right?
She's been fired on the Food Network. QVC, they're so spineless. I mean, it's so obvious what's going on. QVC said they're really disturbed by what came out, and they have no plans to use her now, but they're not making a definitive judgment here because they're monitoring the situation. What the hell does that mean? What it means is, here's what it means. I'll translate for you. They're a bunch of spineless suits, and they've got a bunch of pots and pans that they still need to sell, and they want to clear the inventory, so they're hoping that maybe this thing blows over so they can sell the stuff, but they want to look good to the public because they have a feeling this is the way they feel.
Harvey, you have covered hundreds of celebrity scandals over the years in your job, up to and including, you know, today with TMZ. What advice would you give Paula Deen if you were in her corner to fight this and to come back and salvage her career?
Paula Deen had the worst PR team that I have ever seen handle a crisis, ever. It is unbelievable how they botched this thing. I cannot tell you. I dealt with some of them, and this was all done by committee. Did you see her first apology?
Yes, the video that she put up and then quickly took down and put a different one up that didn't look like it had been edited every 4 seconds.
It was like every sentence they edited it, and this was this PR committee that just screwed her over. She could have just done this heartfelt thing, and they did such a disservice to her. It was crazy. As for what she can do, you know, I mean, it's, you know, over time, you know, time heals a lot of things. I mean, people forgive most things, but some things, you know, it's like with Michael Richards, I don't know. I mean, people kind of still remember that, but there are plenty of other people who have done things. I mean, hell, look at Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, he banged the maid, had a kid.
And
nobody's even thinking of that anymore.
And now he's back, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Paula Deen didn't do herself any favors with, "I have a black friend, but I hope he doesn't stand in front of the blackboard because we won't be able to see him otherwise." That's not really the way to smooth it over.
But I got to tell you something. Do you think that's a hateful woman, or do you think that's a woman who just doesn't have a clue who needs?
Yeah, she's just clueless.
Yeah,
she's just clueless. She's clueless to how insensitive she sounds. You're absolutely right. She needs sensitivity training. That's what she needs. And look, I'm no fan of political correctness, but this is just an older person who has not evolved with the times and doesn't understand what the fuss is about and needs to get with the program.
And grew up in a very different place than we did.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I know you're going to be following this story with great detail at TMZ.com. Also, some very disturbing new pictures and interview about Paris Jackson. You've got to see that up on the site. Where the name North came from Kim and Kanye. That's an exclusive I've not seen anywhere on TMZ.com. All this and more available on the website, and check your local listings for TMZ on TV as well. Harvey, get to your meeting, man. Thanks for coming on.
See you guys.
Got a pretty big show here on a Monday morning on the world famous K-Rock. Trent Reznor joins us in the 8 o'clock hour to talk all things Nine Inch Nails.
Nobody.
Hack. And Dylan Moran is in the next room. He's going to be joining us right after the top of this coming hour at 7 o'clock. He's very funny, by the way.
Tremendously funny.
And I know you love the Irish, Ralph.
Well, those are my people, you know?
Yeah. You guys throwing him back in the office before he comes in here?
No. I think Dylan's a little worse for wear this morning. Seems like it seems like this time of day is not necessarily his norm.
Something else you guys have in common.
Exactly, yes.
All right. Mr. Moran will be joining us right at about 10 minutes or so here on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, Ralph's got the showbiz beat on a Monday. What's going on?
Well, sad news over the weekend. Gary David Goldberg passed away. He was the creator of Family Ties. Remember Family Ties?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Huge hit on television. It's hard to think about it now, but in the mid-'80s, I mean, that was must-see TV. Michael J. Sure. Fox made him a star, of course. He was a multi Emmy-winning creator and writer of television. He won an Emmy working on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. He was a writer on that show. Lou Grant. And, of course, he went on to do Spin City, reunited with Michael J. Fox on that show. Was very successful. He directed feature films as well. And, very talented writer and director. Passed away this weekend from brain cancer. 68 years old today.
He's one of those guys who the average TV viewer doesn't recognize the name, but you sure have enjoyed a lot of his work over the years.
Absolutely. Remember, Ubu was the name of his production company. Sit, Ubu. Sit.
Oh, yeah.
Good dog. That was how we'd sign up all his shows.
Yep.
Yeah. It's Monday morning. Let's take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office like we do. As expected, Monsters University did very well this weekend. Well, the kids are out of school. You need something to go see. They love the monsters. They love the Pixar. $82 million, number one at the box office this weekend.
Pixar could just put out a film with no advertising, just an untitled Pixar project, and people would go at this point,
well,
right?
Well, they're always excellent. They do consistently great work, and it's the kind of film that parents don't mind taking their kids to because they enjoy it as well. It's always very witty and very well produced. World War Z was number two at the box office, $66 million. Man of Steel had a significant drop-off from its opening weekend, $41 million, however, still made it third at the box office. This is the end. Now you see me. The top five, Fast and the Furious 6, The Internship, The Purge, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Iron Man 3 were the rest of the top 10 at the box office this weekend. Kris Jenner's got another great idea. She'd like to add another whore to her stable. Amanda Bynes.
Oh, come on.
No, Lisa. Amanda Bynes, she thinks she has what it takes to take over managing Amanda Bynes' career and get her back to the top. She thinks that Amanda truly could be a hip-hop genius, say sources.
Based on what?
Because, listen, you've heard her work, her musical work. It's genius.
I'm going to have to go ahead and sort of disagree with you there.
Kris thinks she can hook her up with Kanye. And then they can make tons and tons of money. See? Oh, see what God. She's got there?
Still do you guys big. Remember how awful, and I'm looking for it here, Kim Kardashian's song was?
Yes.
Oh, here we go. I got a little bit. Can I play some of this just to give you an idea? Because presumably Kris Jenner signed off on this being good, too. Here's Kim.
Oh, that's right.
So
they
you're
play
telling
in
me,
my jam. I forgot.
You're telling me that Amanda Bynes could get some of that if she comes with Kris Jenner?
And now here's the story. According to TMZ, Amanda is already working on her first rap single with Waka Flocka Flame.
Okay.
They are collaborating on a song together called Shots.
Well, that sounds promising.
Come on. Waka says she has it all together to me. She is cool as hell and ready for the rap world. The only part of the story disappoints me is that her first single isn't called Murder My Vagina, which, of course, is what she invited Drake to do, and now...
Look, I'm no hip-hop expert. I enjoy the music. I'm not an expert, but I will tell you that all the best rapping is done by white girls.
That's for sure, my friends. This is interesting casting news. I am not a devotee of the Downton Abbey. I know you guys love the show.
Oh, we love it. What do you got for us?
I've never seen an episode. However, I understand its popularity.
It's great.
I'm sure it's
too,
excellent.
By the way,
my plate is full.
I don't even know what that is.
My TV plate is full. I can't take on another morsel. But joining the cast for season 4, just announced, Paul Giamatti.
Oh, wow.
Paul Giamatti will be joining the cast.
Can totally see that. That's great.
He will play the maverick playboy brother of Elizabeth McGovern's character, Cora. Now, she plays an American in the show, right?
So that's right.
We don't have to have Paul try to do a British accent or anything. So it'll
that's
all
great
good.
Casting. He's a tremendous actor. He's good in everything.
But we do have to pretend that he's a playboy.
Yes. Well, back then, you could look like that and be a playboy, okay. I guess, if you had a couple bucks in your pocket.
Yeah.
All right.
Playing his mother, Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah, she's great. She's been on before.
Added to the cast as well for season four. So, good stuff for you people who like that sort of thing.
Excellent.
Speaking of good television, it's a little late now because it's all over, but did you watch Mad Men last night?
No.
I did.
No.
Perhaps.
Let's ruin it for Lisa.
No.
Perhaps not only one of the best episodes ever of Mad Men, but maybe one of the best hours of television I've seen in a long, long time.
So excited.
It was amazing, and it's still haunting me. Some of the stuff about it is still haunting me.
Yeah,
it was brilliant, brilliant television.
It was a change, certainly. A lot of stuff happened.
A lot of stuff happened. They can't say nothing happened.
Lisa and I were talking earlier about how we're already sad that next season is the last season. There are only 13 episodes left of Mad
Men. I was thinking that as I watched the season finale. Before it comes back next year for the final. And I was like, damn, that means now that all I have left is one more season.
That's right. We're going to really miss it.
Boy, but just...
And any day now, Kevin's going to start watching it.
Don Draper's rediscovery of his humanity basically was the theme of last night's episode. And it's remarkable to watch him try to do the right thing and just have his life turn to caca.
Wow.
That must have been a moment of party.
It was not a moment of party, Kevin. No, it was a moment of the opposite of party. Today's celebrity birthdays, drummer Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac, 66 years old today. Actor Peter Weller, RoboCop, 66 years old as well. Kurt Smith of Tears for Fears is 52. Mindy Kaling, of course, from The Mindy Project in The Office, 34 years old. Model Petra Nemkova.
Now, she's your tsunami model, isn't she?
She was the palm tree
model. Petra?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. 34 years old today. Minka Kelly is 33. And Solange Knowles. 27 years old today. Beyonce, Solange, they got a whole kind of different kind of name thing going on in that family.
They all sound like sherbets, don't they?
They sure do. Yes, I just want a small cup of the Solange. That looks delicious. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
All this week, the world-famous K-Rock has given you tickets to see Nine Inch Nails November 8th at Staples Center. Yes, we are already talking about November, kids. Get your Thanksgiving orders in. Tickets are going on sale Friday morning at 10 o'clock, plus you qualify to win a private helicopter ride to the show, a suite at the JW Marriott, and the best seats in the house. Mr. Reznor himself will be here in 1 hour from right now on the Kevin and Bean Show. Right now, though, warming up for Nine Inch Nails, Dylan Moran joins us in studio here on K-Rock. Hello,
sir.
How are you?
Hello, good morning. Hi.
You've been here 1 minute. You've already told us that our jobs are deeply sad. And I wanted to let you know how much we appreciate that.
Well, that's all right. Well, come on. What do you go to? You go to bed at 6 with your milk and cookies.
I wish I could go to bed at 6. Yes, I feel much better.
It's a terrible time of day. And that's why we especially appreciate an Irishman getting up early to come in here. But the reason Mr. Moran is here is because you are conquering America now. And you're going to be at the Largo tomorrow night and Wednesday night on your first North American tour.
Yeah, conquering is maybe not the verb I would have picked. You know, I'm coming and interfering with different zones of it.
Why? Here's the thing I'm always curious about. America is huge, and it's very difficult to win in America. It's very difficult to score. It's very difficult to go all the places you need to go to make it in America. You're so popular in Europe, why bother?
Oh, you know, I'm curious. I want to see different places. I get around anyway. I go to all kinds of spots. So I've always been curious about America, more than curious about America. We grew up with America in Ireland. You know, we were always looking westward. So a lot of the music and books and all kinds of media we were growing up with. So it already feels like you know it a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. Yeah, because we do export so much entertainment around the world. Have you been surprised when you come to the United States what it is really like? Like, what is the thing that was more different than you expected it to be?
Yeah, there's a huge difference between reading something or seeing something that's through media, a movie or a program or a book or whatever it is, or comics, which I was a huge freak for when I was a kid, to actually being on the street and, you know, talking, say the phrase New York, it sounds very glamorous to a lot of people. Smelling New York, that's another thing.
It's about the truth.
Yeah.
Walking through walls of urine.
Yes, yes. Many, many feet high, wavering walls of urine waft can make a dent in the veneer of glamour somewhat.
Just not as romantic.
And what about Los Angeles? What's your early read on this city?
Well, Los Angeles is a good case in point because, first of all, L.A. is just, again, a phrase that connotes a lot of glamour and so on, but when you first get here, I was completely floored by the place because it's so wide and spread out and very, very hard to see the joins. But the thing is to come back a couple of times because then you break it down into villages and then you get a feel for this or that street, whether you're in Los Feliz or in Melrose or down in Santa Monica or whatever it is. And then it's much more human and much more approachable because at first it's just this kind of massive spread of Americana and you can't really absorb it and you sort of don't think of the people as being individuals who live on this or that street. They're just those Yanks. So you've got to, it's when you know that there are neighborhoods, then people become people to you and you see where you are.
That is true. That is absolutely the secret to Los Angeles is that there is no city. It's just, it's a million towns put together.
Actually 14 trillion towns.
Ireland is quite small, right?
Yes, it is. In a strictly geographical sense, it is. Not metaphysically, but if we're talking about just square footage, yes, there's a limited amount.
When you're growing up in Ireland, do you feel like, oh, this is my life and these are my people and I'm going to be here forever? Or is the world opened up to you as a possibility if you're the average Irishman?
No. Well, if you look at God Almighty, young Irish people are... They're born and then they're saying thanks very much and walking out of the hospital and getting in a boat at the moment. They're leaving at an extraordinary rate. No, people in Ireland have always grown up with that knowledge that you can jump bail any time. You know, America as well certainly was when I was growing up was a big destination for people in the same way it was for Italian people.
You mentioned that you do a lot of traveling, and you are one of the few people we've had on the show who has spent a considerable amount of time in Eastern Europe and in Russia. I mean, in America, if we're lucky enough to be able to go to Europe, we maybe get a week that we got. If you live in Europe, you really have the opportunity to go whenever you want, right? I mean, you can frequently visit those places, and it sounds like you have.
Yeah, well, a lot of people in Europe don't realize that, actually. We don't act on that a lot. You hear that from Americans and Australians. They go, well, you know, you live here. Why don't you go over to Rome for your dinner?
Yeah.
And get back the next day. And we don't do it. Oh, not nearly enough. And of course, you know, flights these days, you can jump in a plane for really not very much money. So I was really, really interested in those places. And we get, again, partly through media, it's amazing the effect the television and so on has on you as a kid because the television station in Ireland bought an awful lot of cheap Eastern European animation.
Which
I think they must have bought by the yard very, very cheap. So he grew up with it, and that sort of sparked my interest as a kid and then reading. So,
yeah, you actually have friends in Russia, though, don't you?
Like, I do people, now. You, I do now, know. Yeah. And they're going to come over and stay with us. So, yeah, it was an extraordinary experience. Very, very interesting. And there's lots of Russian people here in LA, too.
Tons, yeah. Actually, yeah.
The impression that I have of Russia, because I don't see much of what modern Moscow is like, for instance, is, you know, to me, it's still the Cold War. You know, to me, it's still, they're behind the Red Curtain or something like that, and they're cut off from the rest of the world. But that's not how it is anymore, right?
No, it's not, because there's effectively a new Cold War going on at the moment. American-Russia relations are not at their best, that's for sure. Especially with Mr. Snowden. I don't know whether he's left Russia yet or not.
We don't know.
We don't know where he is right now. Yeah. All the journalists got on the plane to Cuba. He didn't, so they kind of got burned. Apparently they're on a 20-hour flight with no booze.
I would imagine the Russians would like to take him for a cup of coffee and ask him a couple of questions.
Maybe what happened.
What do the Russians think about America, Dylan?
Well, you know, it's very similar insofar as everybody east and west, before they get to the other place, grows up with a lot of comparable cliches and stereotypes and the same sort of rubbish we have about one another. But, you know, lots of educated Russian people who are lucky enough to be able to travel do and are very, very interested in the wider world. And, of course, you know, loads of Western culture is huge in Russia and has been for a long time. And, you know, Levi jeans was probably the most famous example.
Right.
People would do anything for a pair of denims. But, you know, with the Beatles and rock music and all, and that made an early impression back then. Jazz, which had to go underground even, you know, back before then in the 40s and 50s and so on, it was effectively outlawed or frowned upon at least. was a massive cult scene in Eastern Europe and Russia. So,
how about for comedy, though? Like, how do they know your work?
I don't know. I did a television program years ago called Black Books, which I think they certainly saw in places like the Czech Republic. And they saw something in it that chimed with their way of looking at the world. So that's people knew me from that. And I think people saw it in Russia, too. I think that's probably it.
Very interesting. Dylan Moran is here on the Kevin and Bean Show. He is, of course, a very popular stand-up comedian, and he has got a new show called Yeah, Yeah. Am I saying that right, by the way? Is it Yeah, Yeah, or is it Yeah, Yeah?
You know, you can. It's totally up to you. You can do it any way you like.
You're saying them both wrong.
He is unfortunately sold out at the Largo, so way to come in and rub it in for all the people who can't get tickets. But he's playing there tomorrow night and Wednesday night on his North American tour. Dylan Moran is here. We'll take a quick break. Come back with more right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. The French newspaper Le Monde called our guest the greatest comedian living or dead. That's ridiculous, right, Dylan? That's insane.
Well, you know the French, they get excited.
Dylan Moran is in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Two sold out shows this week at the Largo. You're also going to be on with Craig Ferguson tonight. Now, he's from Scotland, right?
Yes, he is. He is.
You guys know each other?
I don't believe I've ever met Craig, no. But
that's going to be a lot of accents in 1 hour, I'll tell you.
Yeah. I live in Scotland, so I'll be able to understand him at least.
How long have you been doing comedy, Dylan?
385 years this autumn.
You look fantastic.
Thank you very much. This is not really me. I've had a lot of work done. I'm really a 5'2" Chinese lady of about 85 years old. But
you are good.
Yeah, I come here to town regularly. I get a lot of work done.
You were very young when you started?
Yes. Yes, I was a nimbus. I was about 19 or 20, yeah.
Okay. And you're one of those people, a lot of people say, oh, if I didn't have this job, I don't know what else I'd be doing. But you seem like you mean it literally. Like you really are unfit for 99.9% of the occupations in the world.
I am occupationally challenged. I would be probably in some sort of lockup.
Institution.
Imagine. Yeah, I think so. People talk about skill sets and expanding their skill sets and developing their skills. That would be going from zero for me. I don't have anything. I can breathe, and I can do this stuff. That's about it.
But there are a lot of people who don't have a passion and they don't have any particular training, so they just have to take whatever menial job they can.
Yeah,
Would that have been you? Would you have been running a cash register
I've been around cash registers and people would come really quickly in a group kind of formation and take me away because they would say, you lost everything. It's all gone. Well, if you stay there, we're all going to prison. You have to walk away now. Go do something else, please. When I was a young guy, so no, that wouldn't have worked. No, really, I don't know what the hell I would have done. The only other thing I can do a little bit is I'm sort of a mediocre cartoonist, but that's about the only other thing I could have done.
So you think desperation is what spurred you?
Absolutely. Desperation keeps you snappy. Yeah. Keeps you zingy, yeah. Fear is a great awakener.
What was school like for you, Dylan?
I didn't really enjoy that. That whole thing. I didn't properly get that. Wasn't really explained to me well. And then there was all these people telling you what to do, and there was desks, and it didn't work for me. It didn't take. So I sort of peeled off from that as soon as I could.
Did you get in a lot of trouble? Did you have paying attention to lessons, and therefore they would come down on you?
Yeah, I didn't get in trouble because I wasn't... I mean, I got in some trouble, but I wasn't like a kid who would, you know, take my anger out on other kids about fighting or anything like that. I got a PhD in sulking, though. I was very good at that. I could droop like nobody's business. I did a lot of that and kind of coalescing into a puddle of resentment in the corner. And they couldn't wait to get rid of me, I think. So it was.
So you found something that you're very good at, and that is stand-up comedy. Has it made you happy?
Yes, it has. I actually really enjoy the fact that other people enjoy it. Communicating is what it's all about for me. So yeah, it does actually. Yeah,
it does seem like sometimes when you're on stage that you're a mess, though. Like impression that we get in the audience sometimes is this is a guy who's this close to melting down.
Yeah. Well, you know, my memory's not so good. It never was great. It hasn't improved with age, but the stuff comes out. It's just sometimes you have to kick the machine a bit, you know, like an old jukebox. But it does get out.
You mentioned growing old a lot too on stage. That seems to be something. You're not an old person. You're a relatively young man, but you seem to be very aware of every year.
I'm preparing myself for the man I'm going to be, so I'm talking to myself about it now. Probably when I hit my 70s or whatever, you know, I won't. I'll go the other direction.
Do you think you'll be an awesome old person, like the kind of old person that we would enjoy being around, or do you think you'll be a cranky, hey, kids, get off my lawn kind of old guy?
No, not a get off my lawn. I don't mind kids on the lawn. They can do whatever they want on the lawn. That's all fine. They should be running around anyway. But probably loud. I kind of like loud older people. I don't like it when they fold into themselves and they apologize for being where they try and breathe a little less.
And you're a married guy now?
I am one of those married guys, yeah. We're a growing group, very powerful, white, middle-aged, married guys. We're going to take over the world. We have nearly everything, but we want it all.
If you do a search on Twitter for your name, you will find that there are a large number of women who really dig you, like are super into you. Is that awkward at all?
I think that sentence, you began the phrase with a large number of women. You can begin these sentences, a large number of women, a large number of men. Statistically, that's going to work out because any given large number of women or men like eating bats, for instance. That is the thing. You can find a group of people for whom the weirdest thing will be a thing. So I wouldn't worry about that. A large group of women like rubbing coleslaw on their knees before they go to work. So.
Those might be the same women who are into you, Dylan. I'm trying to figure out. Look, you're a good-looking young man, but just seeing your act, though, I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of a woman who would go, yes, I've got to get me some of that, and it's not connecting with me.
Maybe you just have some sort of, problem with empathy. Maybe you need to stretch a little further. You can take classes in that kind of thing.
I think you're right. My favorite tweet that I saw was, timeline full of women who would do Dylan Moran until he was reduced to just powder and teeth. Now, that seems like it might be one worth exploring.
Powder and teeth. I've certainly felt like that. Yeah, this morning is not too far away from that. I would maybe jam and teeth.
Well, I suspect you're going to make a lot of new fans while you're over here. You're spending about a month in the United States. You got two shows at the Largo this week, sold out. Going to be on Craig Ferguson. And if all goes well, the plan is to come back soon and do it up bigger, huh?
Yes, I'm going to come back and set up my own restaurant and stand on the street corner and tell people they'll come in, there'll be no food, and then I'll just shout at them for half an hour, take the money.
Sounds like a good plan.
You could follow our guest on Twitter at TheDylanMoran, DylanMoran.com for all the information if you want to buy stuff or if you want to keep track of where he's going to be next. Have a great time at the Largo, man. So glad we got a chance to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much.
By the way, The Neighborhood, right there on K-Rock, is going to be joining us in studio in a couple of weeks, performing live on The Kevin and Bean Show. Looking forward to that. Congratulations to Jesus Geronimo from Paramount. He just won tickets to go see Nine Inch Nails at Staples Center on November the 8th. Tickets going on sale this Friday morning at 10. He's also qualified to win a private helicopter ride to the show and a suite at the JW Marriott, plus the best seats in the house. We got more chances for you to qualify coming up. And Mr. Nine Inch Nails himself, Trent Reznor, will be here in about a half an hour, right here on The Kevin and Bean Show. All right, it's Monday morning. We're getting very near the end of the Supreme Court's session, Lisa. As you know, today is a big day. They're rolling out possibly three big rulings today. They already made a ruling this morning on affirmative action, and now we are waiting, standing by to hear what they have to say about California's Proposition 8 and also the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. So what the Supreme Court comes down with today could have a huge impact on what the future of gay marriage is in the United States.
Yep.
And as far as my feeling on this, I feel like that ship has sailed. If you are at this point still against gay marriage, I think that you will find yourself to be on the wrong side of history. I think it's a thing that was a long time coming, and I think that it is here, and I think that it is happening. And whatever setbacks are delivered today are going to be overturned at some point, because clearly that's the direction we're going. And I think it's a good thing.
It's the direction the world is going. It's
the direction the world is
going. Amazing to me that other countries are so far ahead of us on this.
There are still some people, though, who are very much against it. And one of the very popular complaints that you are hearing from some, and it's a fringe group, is that, well, now that you've made gay marriage legal, now that men can marry and women can marry, what's next? Are you going to let people marry their horse? Are you going to let 11 people get married? Why can't we redefine traditional marriage and have 11 people get married? And one of the most controversial statements has come from our old friend Rush Limbaugh, who says that now that we've accepted gay marriage, or many people have, quote, there is a movement on to normalize pedophilia. And I guarantee you, your reaction to that is probably much the same as your reaction when you first heard about gay marriage. What's happened to gay marriage? It's become normal. And in fact, with certain people in certain demographics, it's the most important issue in terms of who they vote for. So don't poo-poo it. There's a movement to normalize pedophilia. Don't poo-poo it. The people behind it are serious. And you know the left as well as I do. They glom onto something and they don't let go.
That's ridiculous.
Rush?
Ridiculous, my friends?
Yes.
I say no.
I know you say no.
No one wants pedophilia. No one wants people to be able to...
I would beg to differ, my friends. I would say that pedophiles want pedophilia.
Okay, but those people are sick and wrong, and what they do is illegal and immoral, and they go to jail when they do it.
And yet, many people would say the same thing about same-sex marriage, my friends, and then, look, we have lost the debate on this one, my friends.
Well, the difference is...
the language now has been altered, has been perverted, if you will, by the lunatic left, and now it appears as if we will all be doomed to a world where men are marrying other men, women marrying women. Madness. Madness, my friends.
But, Rush, these are consenting adults. These are people of age who fall in love with someone and want to marry them. That's very different than the sexual abuse of a child.
Is it really?
Yes. Yes.
In the final analysis, is it any different?
Yes.
It's completely different.
Some people would say, oh, Rush, don't be nutso on me. Don't be wacko on me, my friends. But I'm telling you, that's the next step. And it's just the first step of many, my friends, of the kind of changes we can expect to see if this indeed gets passed by the Supreme Court.
Now, Rush, I want to hear more about some of these other changes, but I also have to bring up, because I know people are screaming at their radio, what do you know about traditional marriage? How many have you burned through, sir?
As if it means anything to anyone, nor should it. I've been married 4 times myself.
Okay.
That well, most holy of unions?
Are you more...
My friends, the Lord said, go forth and multiply. And so I have multiplied a single wife by 4. So I have multiplied marriage 4 times. I enjoy traditional marriage so much that I've done it 4 times, my friends.
Right, but I think you've...
Which is 4 times more than a lot of people do.
Right, but you've destroyed more traditional marriages than almost anybody too, Rush. I'm just saying...
I would argue with the term destroy, my friend. I have created marriage 4 times is what I've done. I'm a creator of marriage.
All right, so you say pedophilia is obviously going to happen next.
Obviously,
because
that's the next one that the lunatic left will attempt to force down our throats by changing the language to, oh, loving a child so much that you want to engage in a union with a child, and by the time they've perverted our language, we'll be so turned around we won't know what we're voting for any longer.
All right, what else is going on in that rich fantasy head of yours?
Well, it's just a matter of time before, with the gays are getting married, and then the pedophiles have their way, that soon, eventually, everyone will be able to alter the genitalia in any way they see fit. Sexuality will become in flux to the point we hardly recognize it anymore. First, we'll have gay marriage, and then the pedophilia will be running rampant in this country, and then I'm sure some men will start to change their genitals and replacing them with soft serve ice cream machines.
Okay.
But, so you'll be going to have sex with a man, and next thing you know, chocolate and vanilla swirl will be coming at you.
I
first of
like
all,
that.
That sounds like a pretty good deal, first of all.
See, this is the thing I'm talking about. You lunatic liberals now are engaging in an argument where you're saying, yes, we should have bionic men with delicious confections spewing forth from their loins.
I don't think that's happening, but
it will be happening, my friends. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm warning America, my friends.
I will say, in terms of people switching sex, I noticed that Beer Mug now has boobs. I don't know if you've noticed that.
That's just the beginning. Soon women will be altering their bodies as well, be adding multiple boobs. They'll look like a woman feeding a litter of puppies with multiple teats up and down her midsection.
I don't think anyone is interested to do that. This
big
is
bra
just crazy.
Is big bra, my friends. The big bra no... for corporations. When they're trying to sell you a 9-cup bra, you'll know why, because there's big money in bras.
I don't think that's something we actually have
Say
to worry about,
Rush. Latex, my friends.
I think you've lost your mind, Mr. Limbaugh.
I just hope that women start to alter their private parts to make them OxyContin dispensers.
You'd love that, wouldn't
then
you?
Then I'd be interested.
Ralph Garman is here with the show. Bizbeat on a Monday morning Kevin and Bean show. You're kind of opening for Nine Inch Nails right now, Ralph.
Yeah, that's how I roll.
Yeah, put I that one on your resume, right?
I open for him just to, you know, just to get the crowd pumped up.
Trent will be in for the hour coming up right after the news. First, Ralph is here to tell us what's going on in Hollywood.
Well, since it's Monday morning, we always take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office so you can see what people were going to see over the weekend. And looks like most of them went to see a bunch of adorable monsters go to school. Monsters University debuted with $82 million in box office sales this weekend.
Is your daughter old enough for films like that yet?
No, she's really not. And my wife is really pushing hard to avoid anything that's made for older kids,
mm-hmm.
because she's three and she scares easily. And and my wife's biggest fear is that something is going to inadvertently traumatize her that we're not seeing, you know, coming down the pike.
Yeah.
Even the Disney films, you know, there's so much.
Some of those are kind of awful.
So much, like your parents die,
yeah.
and then you get taken away by someone, you're kidnapped. I mean, the most innocuous Disney films to us seem harmless, but,
right.
you know, my wife's like, no, you're not showing her Bambi. Mother gets
it's
shot.
Horrifying.
You want that?
Hey,
is that what you
spoiler,
want?
Spoiler alert on Bambi, by the way. I haven't
you're
seen
all
it
going
yet.
To die tonight.
No, Dumbo gets taken away in a cage. Would you like that? Would you like to be taken away in a cage if you're 3 years old? I'm like, all right, geez, what I'm just trying to show the kid a movie. So we have Winnie the Pooh. We gave Winnie the Pooh. That was good. That was seemed to be tolerant enough, although the Elephants and Woozles nightmare, that was a bit of a trauma. So it's hard to get anything into that kid.
Let her see Old Yeller, because I saw the first three quarters of it, but it's a very happy story about a great dog.
Horrible, horrible man. So, she's still a couple years away from the Pixar films, but look, gives me a backlog of stuff that I can just put on the
shelf. Sure.
Let me say,
25
just watch this and be quiet. I'll be able to do that in a couple years. World War Z debuted this weekend as well to $66 million, made it number two. Man of Steel was third. This is the End and Now You See Me were the top five. Fast and Furious 6, The Internship, The Purge, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Iron Man 3. Those were your top 10 movies at the box office. Looks like porn star Kim Kardashian and Kanye West may be tying the knot, if you believe the British tabloid The London Sun. They claim sources told them that Kanye proposed immediately after the birth of their daughter, North, and that he gave Kim a black diamond ring. You think even if there was a regular diamond ring, you'd get the sense that Kanye would paint it black anyway. It sort of has to be that way. Worth almost $750,000, if you believe this report.
Those are pretty rare, aren't they? Black diamonds?
The black diamonds, yes. Where does he hid it inside a croissant? It was a croissant. And he kept waiting for it. He kept waiting for them to bring it into the room. And they wouldn't bring it. He kept asking for it over and over again. His croissant that he was wanting.
Hurry up with my damn croissants.
That's what he said, I believe, to people on staff there. James Gandolfini, late soprano star, will be honored today by the state of New Jersey. They will fly their flags at half mast. That is a Governor Chris Christie executive order. James Gandolfini was an iconic actor and will be remembered for the timeless impact he left upon television and film in the state of New Jersey and across our nation, he said. Now, some people are giving him heat for that decision, saying that Gandolfini was just an actor, wasn't a head of state, wasn't some other high-ranking public official, but Chris Christie also did the same thing for the E Street Band saxophonist Clarence Clemons and Whitney Houston, so he's got some precedent here about honoring artists that come from the Garden State, which I think is kind of cool.
These are New Jersey icons, let's face it.
Yeah. I was watching Family Tree last night, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, they had, I guess they've been showing this all weekend, they've got this Our Friend Will Be Missed segment with James Gandolfini, a tribute from HBO, and I thought it was kind of very understated and touching. It was kind of cool. From the sublime to the ridiculous, Amanda Bynes in the news. Apparently, she is working on her first rap single. You looking forward to it?
I'm not even a little bit.
Come on.
In a way, I am.
Waka Flocka Flame apparently is working with her. They are collaborating. And he says that she's in great shape. She has it all together to me. She is cool as hell and ready for the rap world.
Well, you have to say that or Amanda will call you ugly.
They are collaborating on a song together called Shots. Shots, shots, shots.
Yeah,
shots,
hasn't that already shots, been done? Shots.
And we'll be able to hear it soon, they promise.
No.
Come on. I can't wait.
No.
AmandaPlease.com.
I need more things to make fun of her for. Madness. And Mel Gibson, apparently his issues with anger that we've all seen in recent years are nothing new. If you talk to Gabby Hoffman, who is an actress who was a little girl actress, she was a child star back in the 90s, and she made a film called The Man Without a Face. Do you remember
that's
that
provocative.
It is provocative. She was a little girl who worked on the set, and she says that he cursed and screamed at her on the set, and she was just 11 years old at the time.
Aww.
Yeah. Now, she admits she was acting like a kid and being a little bit unruly and running around a set, but that's what happens when you are one. And Mel would not tolerate it and apparently was screaming and yelling to her while she was on the set.
You should just smile and me, because I deserve it.
That's what he said to her, and I think that's wildly inappropriate.
Ralph, how did we not know about any of this through his first 25-year marriage?
I don't know. I don't know how he kept it under wraps.
What was that poor woman's life like?
Yeah.
Hell.
Poor Robin. Can you imagine?
Right?
And the kids. Didn't they have like 100 kids together?
They have 11. Yeah.
Those kids must have been getting the...
I don't care.
The bad end of the stick. Well, I'm sure you don't, Mel.
I don't care, bitch. Whore. Okay. Gold
all right.
Digger.
All right. Now let's just... No need for name calling.
You bitch.
Mel is angry this morning.
He certainly is.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Mick Fleetwood of the legendary Fleetwood Mac is 66 years old today. Did you see Sound City? Did you see the documentary that Dave Grohl did about that famous recording studio?
Trent was in that, in fact.
That's right, yeah. And Fleetwood Mac recorded, I guess it was Rumors, right? Their classic
album
Rumors in that same said studio. Fascinating documentary. Peter Weller, 66 years old. Kurt Smith of Tears for Fears is 52. Mindy Kaling is 34. Petra Nemkova celebrates her 34th birthday. Minka Kelly, the lovely and talented actress, is 33. And Solange Knowles is 27 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz...
Came back haunted, the latest from Nine Inch Nails here on the world famous K-Rock. I don't care, haunted or not, I'm just glad you came back. Trent Reznor joins us in the studio right now on K-Rock. Hi, Mr. Reznor, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
What's on your mind? What's going on? How are you feeling?
The reality of what I've gotten myself into is starting to sink in, so I'm a little overwhelmed here.
You do tend to overcommit.
Yes, yes.
That's the thing that we've noticed about you. That's been the through line for Nine Inch Nails is you go out there and you go hard for like 2 years and then you wake up one day in a puddle and you go, I can't do it anymore. I must stop. And then you go underground and you start to get the itch and then you're back.
There is a pattern emerging, isn't there?
There certainly is. Well, we have a lot of ground to cover here with your latest visit here on the Kevin DeBee Show. It's great to see you as always. Let's start with what a surprise it was when you made that statement. Hey, I haven't been honest with you about what I've been up to. Tell us how that announcement came to be that you, in secret, had been recording this new record.
It started about, I don't know, a year and a half ago or so. There was I still owe Interscope a greatest hits record. And there was talk of maybe doing a couple new tracks for that compilation under Nine Inch Nails header. And this was coming out of the couple films I scored and working with How to Destroy Angels. And I started tinkering around with a couple songs that I thought might fit that for Nine Inch Nails. You know, I felt inspired by what was happening. And a couple songs led to a couple more songs, and pretty soon it was a full-fledged, let's make an album. And I chose not to announce that because I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I wasn't sure... if I'd even want to release it when it's finished. It wasn't really a plan then. It was just it was seizing the moment of inspiration and just running with it. So,
When you're writing a song and laying it down, is there something that makes it a Nine Inch Nails song, or will there ever be such thing as a Trent Reznor just solo record that's not Nine Inch Nails but is still your music?
I don't know. I mean, everything I've ever written up until recently has been for the project of Nine Inch Nails, which has really been kind of defined by subject matter and tone to some degree. And I've tried to keep that as broad as it can be and keep it expansive, but yet not something that makes sense to be in that heading. The work I did with films felt very different and felt like its own thing. The work we did with How to Destroy Angels... was a separate header. You know, it felt like a different thing. It was done differently. It was different people involved. I had a different subject matter. And I think the biggest thing in that was that I wasn't in the middle of the stage. It wasn't my voice. It wasn't my words. I wasn't the lead actor in the play.
Right.
So I guess Nine Inch Nails, you know, up to this point has really been when I'm in that role, that's kind of what this stuff has become.
Hesitation Marks is what you settled on as the name of the album. It's coming out on September 3rd. We just heard the brand new single. This will be the first Nine Inch Nails music since 2008. Of course, you've been busy, though. You certainly, you know, it's not like you've just been on a beach somewhere. You've been working. But time goes by. It's been a long time since we've had new Nine Inch Nails.
Time does fly, doesn't it?
Yep. Let's talk about the guys you made this record with. There was a time back in the day where you liked to play everything by yourself, but it seems like in the last few records you've really kind of embraced and enjoyed being part of a band. Is that so?
Yeah. I mean, what I learned from working with Fincher was really collaboration. You know, and I have collaborated mainly in the past with Atticus Ross and Alan Mulder consistently over the years. Those guys have been my sounding board, where I'm kind of the band, and they're the other voice in the room that walks me off the ledge and is able to give constructive feedback. Working with Fincher, it was interesting because I was in service to the film and him, and it was working on a team, and it was working in a much more collaborative environment. That because there was a lot of respect there. It really was interesting, and it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was nice not being the guy having to call all the shots at the end of the day and working in a different role. That carried on into How to Destroy Angels, and that was fun because I was working with friends and life partner, and mm-hmm. again, it was a democracy. You know, it was a different situation. With Nine Inch Nails, it's always been kind of me calling the shots in that role. And I think what happens now is I'm a little more comfortable in my own skin, and I'm able to be in a room with people that inspire me and or intimidate me and hold my own. And I tend to try to bring in some people that can do things I can't do and see where that leads. And we did that a little bit on this new record.
That's got to be a neat feeling to kind of discover and find collaboration being as satisfying as doing it all yourself. That sounds like you're in a really good place right now in terms of that.
I'm getting there. You know, it's taken a while. It used to just be, you know, music's been this thing that's so intimate, and it's this private, lack of a better word, very intimate, personal thing that comes deep from within your soul, and it's fragile, and it's delicate, and it's... It takes the right environment to be able to share that, particularly when it's not finished and it might suck and it's not, it's in a state where it could be damaged. You need to be in the right frame of mind and the right level of confidence, which I've never really had, to bat those ideas around with somebody, particularly when it's somebody, you know, that you've always looked up to, for example.
Sure. You're in rehearsals right now for the tour? That's what's up?
Yes, deep in rehearsals.
And... tell me about that, because, you know, every move you make, because this tour is so highly anticipated, makes headlines with this guy's now out, this guy's now in. You know, it seems like it might be disruptive kind of having changes in what you thought the live lineup was going to be, and it's turned out to not be that.
What would give you that impression?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you're adapting fine. And look, you're lucky that you've got a wide pool of great performers to be able to pull from. If, you know, if you don't get this guy, you can get this guy and it'll still be great. But I wondered what that has been like in terms of your thinking, where your headspace is about the tour.
You know, yes, it's been disruptive. You know, I started off with an idea of who I thought would be in the band, and we started working that way. And you realize... you know, you can spend a lot of time, as I've done, hypothesizing and imagining and projecting as to what it's going to be like with this chemistry and this recipe of people in a room playing music. And in reality, it rarely is that. You know, it turned out to be something different in the case of a couple people in the band. Some switches were made, and it's turned into something different.
Right.
Much like any creative endeavor, it does go through that path of, you know, how you think it's going to be and then how it actually winds up being. So that's been, you know, it's felt like a wrench in the works at times, but at the same time, it's made me rethink a lot of how we put this together. And I think where we're ending up at is a place that's much truer to what Nine Inch Nails should be and better in the long run.
Fuji Rock Festival in Japan is going to be the first date. That's going to be on July the 26th. Then you're going to be playing all over the country, doing Lollapalooza, doing Outside Lands. You've got a bunch of dates up on the website. We've got them, of course, at KROQ.com. And we are actually right now giving away tickets all this week here on KROQ to see Nine Inch Nails November 8th at Staples Center. Tickets are going on sale this Friday morning at 10. In just a few minutes, we'll give you a chance to call in. You can also qualify for a private helicopter ride to the show. Did you know anything about this, Trent? Is this news to you?
I heard it on the way here.
Also, a suite at the JW Marriott and the best seats in the house. We'll give you a chance to win that coming up in just in a few minutes. And we got a lot more questions for Mr. Reznor. He is here. We'll talk Nine Inch Nails when we return on the Kevin and Bean Show on KROQ. Trent Reznor in studio with us here on the world-famous KROQ. We just played the new song Came Back Haunted a few minutes ago. I understand you have someone special doing the video, Trent. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to work with David Lynch on that.
Now, how does that happen? Do you just sit outside his house and then ambush him when he comes out for coffee or what? Or do you know this guy?
We worked together on Lost Highway years ago.
That's right. I remember that.
That got my foot in the door. He remembered who I was and took the call, and that's how it happened.
Have you already shot it?
We did, yeah. I just saw, I think, a final cut of it last night.
Anything you can tell us about it?
It's weird.
It's David Lynch.
What? Yeah. What? David Lynch is part
enough.
Of a weird video?
Yes. Strangely enough, yes.
Are you in it?
Yes, I appear in it.
Don't make me guess too many more times in a row. Are there llamas in it? What else is going on in it?
No, it's just a bizarre thing. When we saw the first rough cut, it was like, okay, this couldn't be better. This is exactly what we were hoping it would be, and it's kind of indescribable, and it's not like any other video we've done, and it's that's what we wanted.
When's it coming out?
I think it's coming out the end of this week.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Does it seem fair to you that you have more Oscars than David Lynch does? Don't you feel like you should give him yours?
It's definitely not fair.
Well, that's very exciting. Have you already picked out other songs from the album that you want to make videos for?
You know, this time around, I'm doing something a bit different. You know, we signed with a major label. We signed with Columbia here in the States. And the reasoning behind that was simply this, that it felt like the right thing to do. Simple as that. You know, I'm catching some slack from the do-it-yourself camp. But I never signed up to say, hey, I'm the spokesperson for that sort of thing. You know, I did what I thought was right several years ago when we put out records on our own, Ghost mm-hmm. and Slip. And this felt like the right thing to do for this record, for me, right now. And part of it was I realized that I was spending a lot of time thinking about stuff that wasn't music. And I was spending a lot of time thinking about marketing and thinking mm-hmm. about how to engage fans and how to price points and just stuff that's... I found I can do it alarmingly, but I'd rather not do it. You know, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of effort that goes into that, a lot of thought. And it's time that's not being spent writing music or thinking about things that mean more to me.
And Columbia Records has an infrastructure in place to handle sales and marketing. That's what they do, and they can assist you. I was frankly surprised to see the news that you had signed as well, and I know that it has been something that you, I don't want to say struggled with and put words in your mouth, but I know that you've investigated other ways to do business. As you mentioned, you offered the Slip for free when it came out. But you just thought for now, for where you're at, this is what you want to do.
It depends on what's happening in the climate out in the outside world, and it depends on what you're trying to attain as an artist or what our goals are. You know, the experiment began with How to Destroy Angels, where my mission with How to Destroy Angels was to not preach to the choir and have a little echo chamber of Nine Inch Nails fans who are getting something that's not really what they want, and launch this thing as its own brand and its own identity as fairly as it can be, with its own platform. And with people that are thinking about, is it in the record store in Prague? And is it being serviced here in places, things I don't care that much about. You know, I don't mm-hmm. have the patience to deal with. And our experience with Columbia was excellent. And we found that in this climate, what's happened in the last several years, things have been whittled down to A-list people working. And it was nice to have a team of very competent and smart people that could help do things that really made the project better. I think we had 4 videos for that record. Nine Inch Nails hasn't made a video since, I don't know when, a long time.
Right.
You know, that was a means of putting out a better, in my opinion, a better product and reaching more people than I would have done on my own. So we just carried that over to Nine Inch Nails because our mission with Nine Inch Nails was to also just reach as many people as we can on my terms with the music that I make without compromise with the art side of it. But being able to put it out and not be bogged down with some of the, you know, really just marketing stuff.
Understood.
It's not that interesting.
The last time you were here, and of course a lot has changed in the music industry with the rise of Pandora and with Spotify and things like that, the new iTunes that's coming out, you told us you'd like to see what you thought was fair at the time was a subscription model for music. Fans would pay a monthly fee and they'd be able to hear whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
Your name has been linked to this Daisy that's supposed to be coming out later this year. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, I thought that so much that I designed one with the Beats Crew. And with Dre and Jimmy, I was working with them kind of as an experiment on some hardware products that haven't seen the light of day yet. But the talk around that camp a couple years ago was a real interest in putting out a subscription music-based service that differs from the current offerings by being a lot easier to use and more based around curation. And in a nutshell, it being smart enough to not just offer you, hey, here's all the tracks in the world, good luck, search for whatever you want, that experience, but one where you're being turned on to new things based on what you like, and from trusted sources, being served up things that is the right music for the right time in the right place. And it was a really interesting proposition and project to be involved in from the ground up of designing something that could reach a lot of people in mass scale, that also what I could bring to the table and have brought into the design of this is the opportunity for it to be musician-friendly and provide tools to the artist community, which seems very disconnected from all of that, you know, with current offerings, where, you know, in Spotify, my music's in there, but I have no say over how it's presented or what it looks like, and me as a person has no connection to the artist in there. Mm-hmm. And I've learned from doing everything myself in the last few years that there's a lot of tools that could be provided, and this doesn't have to be end game where one side wins everything. I think that if a new platform emerged that could be a next big channel of the way people consume music, and at the same time it carves out some rights for the actual people that are making the music and provides them with some tools and a way to curate their own material in a way that presents it the way they'd like it to be presented, that feels like something that's worth fighting for. So.
Do you feel like you are being, as an artist, taken advantage of on sites like Spotify? And by that I mean, are you getting far less than what you should be getting for your music being up there?
Certainly. Not only from royalties, but also from control of my wares, you know, mm-hmm. at least presenting things the way I'd like it to. I find my music on services. I didn't put it on there. I signed a contract 20-some years ago that said future technologies, because I would have signed anything, and I did sign anything. And that meant any new thing that comes out, we can put your music on however we want. We'll make sure that we get taken care of. But,
right.
You know, thanks for the good songs.
The word that you use, curation, I think is an important one, because when everything in the world is available all the time, always, it's daunting. It's too much. You can't – there's nowhere to start. You do need some sort of filter – where you have some sort of like-minded people who say, hey, you like this, you'll love this, right?
That's exactly the point. I mean, you find with what you see with the internet, you know, Google provides a way of curating what you're looking for into tangible results that can steer you in the way you want to go. I think with the world of music, what we've seen, in my opinion, with a service like Spotify is that blank screen with a search bar. I mean, my experience with that was, oh, this is pretty cool. I have all the music in the world. Okay, what do I want to listen to? let's see if my own music... Okay, it is. All right, what else? And that experience is not the one that I think can relate, not just to niche people like myself or music heads, but to mainstream people that want to be turned on to things that, without effort necessarily. They can search, but they can also be turned on to some of the great music in the world through an intelligent portal that, with people with integrity putting it together.
It's almost impossible to make a living as a working musician in 2013. I wonder in 20 years if it'll be possible at all, or if you will just have to accept. I mean, people will buy a live ticket to come see you, but I wonder if that'll be the only revenue stream. Is that merchandise?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. You know, the experiments I've done with Nine Inch Nails have really been centered around Nine Inch Nails, which, you know, was based on something that came up through the label system that, that benefited from the support of independent and major labels. Got big through that process. And what we've done, what I've done in Nine Inch Nails, you know, isn't the right thing for the new up-and-coming artist. I know that. You know, I've been trying to keep my own head above water and trying to figure it out for myself.
Trent, the last time you were on, Social Network had just come out, your soundtrack, and it was selling for $3 on Amazon. And you said, I'm not sure that I worked a year on this so people could buy it for less than the cup of coffee.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't know what to tell you. It's depressing at times. You know, it's certainly the value of music has – it's become a loss leader. It's become devalued. And there's a number of reasons for that that could go on forever explaining that. But, you know, as someone that creates content and creates music, you know, it is sad to see that happen. You know, it's sad for current generation of musicians, the future generation. You know, and I'm hoping that some sort of system will emerge and stabilize that starts to make it so it is fair to some degree to the content creators. You're seeing this disruption happen, though, across all media, you know, radio,
we have,
TV, film,
exactly, right. We have done our job. We have sufficiently bummed out our guests. So at that, we'll take another break. We have one more go round with our friend Trent Reznor here on the world famous K-Rock, and we'll return in a moment right after this. Maybe that wasn't the best song to choose if we were going to try to inject some levity into this final segment of the interview. Maybe we should have found ourselves a little peppier, perhaps. Trent Reznor is here on the Kevin and Bean Show on the world-famous K-Rock. How do your old songs sound to you now, Trent, when you hear them?
Some of them sound vital. Some of them don't sound as vital. You know, so we've kind of moved those off the set list. Well, of when you're talking about us playing live, that's the thing. And recently, I've listened back to a lot of stuff just because we're getting ready to tour, but I've spent years not really listening to my own material. So,
oh, interesting. Anything you're embarrassed by? Or anything that you're shocked at how good it was because of how young you were?
No, you
Has
know,
that ever
I really feel like, you know, what I've put out was the best I could do when I did it. You know, and when I listen back to some of those things, I certainly think I wouldn't do that now, and that's not who I am now, but there's me in there, you know, and those. There's a few tracks I would omit today, and there's things I think that felt like the right thing to do at the time that really weren't the right thing to do. But generally speaking, you know, I'm proud of what I've put out, and it was representative of who I was at the time I did it.
Let's talk a little bit about more about the stage setup that you have for this new tour that you're getting ready to embark on. Again, you kick off at the end of July in Japan. You're playing some festivals. Then you've got your own dates. You have kind of reinvented the Nine Inch Nails stage show since long ago, the last time you went out, right?
Well, I dug a pretty deep hole this time around. I've always enjoyed the idea of presenting the band in an interesting way and paying attention to the production and the stage design, and because I think it frames the music. And if you're paying to come see a show, I think you should be taken into a different place, and it should be an experience that's not just for your ears, but it envelops you. So the arena tour we're doing this fall that you're giving away tickets to, that's kind of the full-on culmination of everything we've done in the past, refined into the present. So it's loosely based on what we did, Lights in the Sky, which was the best tour I've ever pulled off, which was sometime in the past, I think 2008. That was very video heavy, but it was an interesting thing. We've spent a lot of time, Rob Sheridan and I, really refining and making that show an interesting kind of, you're coming to see us in an arena, we're going to transform that arena from a terrible sports environment into the coolest place we can make to frame this music to take you on a journey through our thing. But unexpectedly, what started as a couple festival shows, which normally would be dismissed as, let's just go out and play a greatest hit set and have fun, and where's it happening? On Germany? All right, whatever. That's turned into some pretty high profile things throughout the planet that are now webcast, which adds another dimension of exposure. So we're probably the boldest thing we've ever done is developed this show that's based on that, that's based on a very different environment, which is outside and festival-y, and I've ended up spending probably more time on this than anything else. We're deep in building this show that's completely different than the one that's going to happen in arenas. That's kind of hard to describe other than I think it's going to be cool. And it's, well, it's a different thing for us.
I know that Rob Sheridan has been your co-conspirator for many, many, many years on Nine Inch Nails, but the work that he did on the How to Destroy Angels tour was like nothing I've ever seen on stage in terms of he was like another musician on stage, except he was playing light.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Super cool. That was the other. That was the third production we've taken on this year. So that those shows for How to Destroy Angels were, you know, that was a risk. We designed that. We spent a year and a half coming up with the concept of that and trying different fabrication of material and things. Based on, we knew we were going to play Coachella. We thought we'll just do that one show and it's going to be what it is. And it ended up being 13 or so shows. But that turned out, you know, that could have just been terrible, to be honest with you. And it wasn't until we got put it together and put light on it and went, oh, wow, this is fantastic.
Now it's cool, right. Yeah. Let me ask you, in our remaining moments here, Trent, let me ask you a couple more questions about hesitation marks that we have not gotten to. You've been on, by the way, I think this is your fifth visit to the Kevin O'Bean Show, so we thank you for that, for always being kind enough to come back and give us a little bit of your time. I think last time you were on, you told us that sometimes you shy away from songs that sound too obvious, too poppy, too hooky. Sometimes you're not interested in that. But this comeback Haunted, to me, sounds like, I mean, if you will, vintage Nine Inch Nails in terms of having that drive and that power and the sing-along and everything else that we've loved in some of your other songs. Are you kind of, has it, so the pendulum swung back and now you're comfortable with those sorts of songs again?
I think with this record, I didn't go into it with an agenda of it's going to be this or that. I sat down and from a very pure place just went, what feels right? And songs started coming out. Generally, I would say it's more, the album is more electronic in nature. It was more exciting to me than loud banging drums. The Slip, the last record, was very much made to sound like it was in a garage with loud banging drums and whatnot. This record was much more, I just kind of wound up feeling more electronic, for lack of a better word.
Is this single representative of what the rest of the record sounds like?
Well, going back to a question you asked me earlier about I don't know what you asked, something about some tangent
something
I went
dumb.
Off on, and I started talking about record labels. I turned the record over, and I said, you know, what does everyone think is the best plan here? Here's what I would do. And the plan that came back wasn't what I would do, but in the spirit of experimentation, I said, let's try it. You know, and I think their call being management, my trusted team of people on my end and record label, was let's put out Came Back Haunted, which to your point, feels familiar. It's very self-referential, you know, in purposely. I think that's the most like that there is on that record. But it's felt like the biggest moment I can remember in Nine Inch Nails history in terms of feeling like people are aware of it.
Sure.
And that was kind of the point, you know, of doing this thing. Was to,
that song came back big and is one of our most requested songs here, Kerrick. I mean, it definitely got the word out that Nine Inch Nails is back, which after being gone so long, that's what we want. All right. Next year will be 25 years since Nine Inch Nails began, making you eligible for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Any interest in going in? Because I feel like you have to. I feel like you would be a first or second ballot Hall of Famer.
I haven't spent a whole lot of time thinking about it, to be honest with you. You know, I don't have a great answer to that. You know,
You don't hate it though, like some people do, who thinks it's ridiculous that there is such a place.
And I haven't thought that much about it. I'm aware of it more because I lived in Cleveland for a while, and there was that was when it was being built or being decided to put there, and there was a real sense of pride in that city to get that there, so they had something. But I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it, you know.
Fair enough.
You know, my thing nowadays, you know, winning an Oscar was an interesting process, you know, and it was something that I would have at one point said, you know, this is a bunch of crap. What's the point? You know, I'm never going to be a part of that scenario. But it felt nice. You know, I'm not one, to be honest with you, to allow myself to pat myself on the back too much and feel good about things. But that was a flattering scenario to go through. You
know? We are ending on a happy note, which is Trent Reznor finally realizing that people like him. How about that? Ladies and gentlemen, people like him. It's a good way to go out. Trent, I know we'll see you again soon, my friend. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having me here.
Praise you, Jesus. Oh, yes, Jesus.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, Jesus.
Oh, yes, Jesus.
Thank you, Jesus.
Is that what you're thinking, Ralph?
Yeah. Oh, I praise you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Nick Walenda. Yeah.
Yes, I do.
We are going to talk about Nick Walenda walking across the Grand Canyon on the tightrope coming up after the top of the hour here on K-Rock. Did you watch any of that last night, Ralph? It was crazy.
Nope.
It was crazy.
He was wearing a harness, wasn't he?
Nope.
He didn't wear a harness?
He did not.
Oh, my goodness.
The channel that he originally went to wanted him to wear a harness, and he said, nope, I'm not going to wear a harness. That's how it ended up on the Discovery Channel. So, yeah, he falls, he dies. That's how that would work, which kind of made the paramedic standing by seem kind of useless, to tell you the truth.
That's true.
There was going to be no injury. You're just going to use a sponge and pick him up.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. So, anyway, we want to talk about that coming up next here on the Kevin Beach Show. First, though, time for the showbiz beat on a Monday. Here's Ralph.
No, Neil Patrick Harris tweeted that he was glad he made the decision to watch it on the Discovery Channel. However, he said he was unhappy with the decision to play the drinking game where he took a shot every time Nick said Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah, he said that was a mistake.
So. It was the most religious show in the history of television.
That's good. Jesus could use a little good pub, I think.
Sure.
Sir.
You know? Gotta break the drummer off some. Hey, how about this? What do you get when you cross an owl with a goat?
What do you get when you cross an owl with a goat? I don't know.
A hootenanny. How about the 19th annual Hootenanny happening down there at the Oak Canyon Ranch in Irvine on July the 6th? It's right around the corner. Great lineup, including, of course, Social D, Face to Face, many, many more bands. This is going to be a great event. Would you like to go? Of course you would. July the 6th? It's right around the corner.
Sure.
Next week. Call right now, 1-800-520-1067. The first two callers to get through. We'll get a pair of tickets to the 19th annual Hootenanny.
Will Glenda be there?
Glenda will be there. She absolutely will be there. She told me she's a huge Face to Face fan, so she'll be checking them out.
I'm impressed.
Every Monday morning, we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office. Monsters University was number one with $82 million. World War Z. People love their zombies. It came out in droves to see that film, $66 million in its debut weekend, did very well for itself. Man of Steel also did very well with $41.2 million, made it number three. This is the end, and Now You See Me rounded out of the top five. Fast and Furious 6 was sixth, then seventh was The Internship, The Purge, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Iron Man. A paltry $2.2 million made it number 10. So Iron Man 3 is only the fifth largest grossing film in history, that's all.
Isn't that something?
That's all it's got.
I can't even imagine how much money Robert Downey Jr. has. He's one of those guys who's got that percentage of the box office,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's making much money at all.
Really?
What?
Yeah, because this weekend, Iron Man robbed a bank in Flagler County, Florida.
What happened?
Yeah. Iron Man showed up with an Iron Man mask, and things are tough times for Iron Man, I think, because he was wearing the Iron Man mask, but then he was just wearing a tan jumpsuit, tan boots, and a red backpack. So apparently the mask is still working, but the rest of the armor is in the shop. That's maybe
why. I hope it was Jaden Smith.
Maybe that's why he needed the cash. He grabbed an undisclosed amount of cash, then sped off in a late model compact car, they say. So the jets aren't working. He can't fly around anymore. Times are tough, even for Tony Stark.
I had no idea.
Well, look. Mandarin destroyed his house, destroyed an entire place in Malibu there, all the armor and stuff.
Sure.
That's got a cost. He probably wasn't insured. He's going to steal some money.
Tough times for Iron Man.
Bank in Florida. Iron Man. How do you pick that as your disguise? Let's see. I could use a stocking or maybe a ski mask. No, give me that Iron Man mask. What do you think is the most pirated television show in America? Pirated. This is illegal downloads. These are illegally recorded episodes of the show, and then they are downloaded, shared illegally to other people.
It's got to be it's got to be something on one of the pay channels, something that people don't have. It's on free TV. There's no sense to pirate.
Excellent deduction, Mr. Holmes. Now, let me give you the top 10. I'll start with 10. We're going to work our way up. Maybe you have a guess. Revenge, the ABC series Revenge was 10th on the list.
Again, it's on TV. Why?
That's what I'm thinking. Why?
And it doesn't strike me as sort of a geek, nerd-friendly show.
Right.
A lot of people sit in front of the computer saying, oh, I can't wait to get that BitTorrent of revenge this weekend. Modern Family was 9th. See, again, same thing.
Hmm.
Vampire Diaries over on the CW was 8th. Arrow, speaking of the CW, was 7th. Then Vikings. That's on History Channel.
Yeah.
Okay.
6th. Top 5. Hannibal was 5th.
Well, I was just dead wrong then, because most of these are just on regular channels that people get. I'm confused.
The Walking Dead, 4th. How I Met Your Mother, 3rd.
Okay.
It's true.
This is a weird list.
Number 2, The Big Bang Theory. That makes sense to me, because a bunch of nerds just sitting at their computers, so they're just stealing stuff willy-nilly.
Sorry, I was early with my tipping.
You were absolutely early. Number 1, with 5.2 million illegal downloads, most pirated TV show of the year?
Yes.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah! Oh.
Game of
Fire
Thrones.
Beer Mug.
And Fire Beer Mug, yes. I wish that was a show where every week we could find a new way to fire him.
Love it.
Wouldn't that be great?
We could do that.
Yeah. But then we'd have to hire him back. Maybe we just do a one-time special. Maybe we do like a Nick Wallenda type special where we just send Beer Mug out on a rope.
See what happens.
Yeah, Jesus. Okay, Jesus. He's doing that as he walks across the Grand Canyon.
Fantastic. But he'd be eating while he was walking,
oh,
too,
sure,
though, right?
Yeah. That's the only way to get him across the Grand Canyon. Have like a, you know, like a meatball sub on the other side of the canyon
right.
on the end of the rope, and
he would run
across it.
That's right.
That is awesome.
He would barely touch the wire. Today's celebrity birthdays, drummer Mick Fleetwood of the legendary Fleetwood Mac Band is 66 years old today. Peter Weller, also 66. Kurt Smith. Basis for Tears for Fears is 52. Maybe we got to get a little shout, let it all out for those
Let's
guys.
Let's do that.
A little Tears for Fears celebration. Mindy Kaling, 34 years old today, as is Petra Nemkova. Actress Minka Kelly is 33. The name like Minka, you got to be hot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Minka.
That's why you watched her every season of Friday Night Lights when that show
couldn't
was
get
on.
Enough. Couldn't get enough of
Lila the cheerleader.
Of Minka. She was also in the new Charlie's Angels.
Yes. For that minute.
That's how I know her. Solange Knowles, sister of Beyonce, is 27 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Imagine Dragons on the world-famous K-Records, 106.7 KROQ. By the way, if you're just tuning in and missed our interview with Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, of course, it'll be up at KROQ.com later on today. You can catch up and enjoy, and you should. So, Lisa, you weren't watching Nick Wallenda last night walking across the Grand Canyon?
No.
What does a guy have to do to get you to watch him on television? You know this dude.
I was at a thing, and I forgot about it, but I heard all about it later, and I watched it online.
Yes, it is posted online. You should definitely watch it. I really didn't hear my whole thing.
Okay.
I kind of cared because we had Nick in, and I felt bad for him that he could die and abandon his beautiful wife and his young children.
Yeah.
Because I think that being a Wallenda is a tough way to go, man. That's a difficult occupation. He's a seventh generation acrobat, basically. He's one of these guys that walks on the tight ropes, the high wires. And lots of family members have already died. They're really more the falling Wallendas than they are the flying Wallendas most of the time, right? And we had him in and we're like, and Muggs, you said to him, you're crazy and you could die. You know that, right?
Yeah. And he said, his response was, well, thank you. I take that as a compliment.
So I was sort of interested because we met him. Otherwise, I wasn't tuned in right at 5 o'clock of the Discovery Channel to see it. It was a 2-hour and 20-minute live broadcast, by the way, and he didn't start walking until 1 hour and 45 minutes in.
So they just talked about it before
I knew
that?
There was going to be an awful lot of hype, and they got to talk to the engineers and the meteorologists, and they got to show highlights of other walks that he's done, interview his family and his doctor, just like everybody was on there. Then he finally gets out there. But I have to tell you, once he stepped foot on the wire and you realized it was – I mean, he really could die any minute now. It was impossible not to just sit there holding your breath.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And – look, it's one thing to say he's walking across the Grand Canyon, but when you see it and you see that he's 1,500 feet from the canyon floor and there's nothing and there's no harness and there's no net and you realize that's what this dude is doing for entertainment, how do you not watch that guy?
Yeah, and that shot looking down is just terrifying.
It's insane. I was not prepared for how many shout-outs Jesus got. And by the way, I want to hear from you. If you were watching Nick Wallenda, we haven't had much time. We've been very busy today. But if you were watching Nick Wallenda on your TV yesterday and you have some thoughts, I want to hear from you about the way that it went. Was it difficult, do you think?
or does it just look difficult because we can't do it? Maybe it's not that hard to walk on a wire, you know, to walk on a wire that's 2 inches wide. I don't know. Were you hoping he was going to fall? What'd you think about all of his shout outs to Jesus? What'd you think about the broadcast? What'd you think about his dad who would not shut up talking to him in his ear for the entire time he was walking across? I want to hear from you with your thoughts on Nick Wallenda at 1-800-520-1067. What did you think about the walk yesterday? Here's a little bit about him shouting out to Jesus, though.
Thank you, Lord. Yes, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Calm those winds in the name of Jesus. The enemy has no hold on me. Thank you, Lord. Yes, Jesus. That's my king. Praise you.
Now, I was asking you earlier, Lisa, if you think this is his mantra, is this so that he can focus on something so that he doesn't become terrified and crap himself when he realizes what he's doing? Or is this him just surrendering like a leaf on the wind and just saying, I'm in your hands, Lord, whatever your mission is for me, just take me.
I think that's what it is. But I mean, I think he truly believes that, I guess, Jesus is helping him out as he goes across.
And I wonder if you're really possibly 4 seconds away from death, if maybe it's an excellent time to suck up to the Lord. Like, maybe that's the time you should be saying, I'm totally down with Jesus, because if you believe in that and you realize that you might die, you want to be on his good side, right?
Right. Well, and this is, I mean, his job is danger, right? So right. He's probably always thinking Jesus.
Yeah.
Praise you, Jesus. Yes, Lord. Keep me calm. Lord, help me to relax, Father. Christ's holy name, Lord.
I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I was just so unprepared for that being the thing that he would say the entire way across the Grand Canyon on a wire. Yeah. It was crazy. Let's talk to Jack. He's on line 2 to get us going here with your calls on Nick Wallenda. High wire walking across the Grand Canyon yesterday, 1-800-520-1067. Hi, Jack. What'd you think?
Well, first of all, happy birthday, Lisa May.
Thank you.
Did you send her a penis photo like I asked everybody
no,
to?
I'm good. No, you don't have to do that.
I didn't. But I'll
Jack, when you hang up this phone, get yourself a penis photo and send it to Lisa. She loves it. She plays coy and pretends she doesn't, but trust me, she'll be happy, okay?
Awesome. I'll make sure I send a personal one.
Okay.
All right. Tell me about the high wire walker. What'd you think?
Well, I started watching it. I taped the first one, and it was long, like you said. It took forever for him to get on the wire, and yes, it was a whole lot of Jesus. I was like, wow. I thought that guy wanted to convert everybody into Jesus Christ by the end of the show.
Did you think that's what he was doing? Did you think he was proselytizing?
No, I felt that way.
I think it was an opportunity for him in his mind.
Because I felt like that was his personal strength. Like, that's what was getting him through. I don't know that he could do that walk without praising Jesus.
What kept me going and watching the show was his wife. I was like, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, show more of that and less of him and Jesus. And I was like, all right.
Yeah, you know, his wife is ridiculously hot because I respect what he does, but he's a dork, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw him because, I mean, I heard him when he came on with you guys then. Yeah, I was surprised, and I go, all right, you know, this guy seemed pretty cool. He seemed pretty out there. But when I saw him, I go, what?
Yeah, he doesn't look anything like I expected when he came
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Yeah, you expect he's going to be.
He's a stocky guy.
Yeah, you think he's going to be like this, you know, like a young, French, like suave, handsome, like swashbuckler or something like that.
Yeah,
and he looks
exactly.
like a guy who works at Home Depot.
Yes.
All right, Jack, thanks for the call. Appreciate that.
Thank
you, sir. Appreciate you listening. Let's do Jesse up next. Jesse's on line 1 here on the Kevin Amin Show. What'd you think of the Wallendas? 1-800-520-1067. Taking calls on Nick Wallenda and the Grand Canyon walk yesterday. Hi, Jess.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
I just thought that it was way more intense than I thought it was going to be. It was actually pretty scary the whole time watching this guy. I was really on edge the whole time.
The wind was blowing.
Yes, the wind was blowing. And what'd you think about when he stopped on the wire and then knelt down and just waited for the rope to stop moving? That was crazy, right?
Yeah.
That was really crazy. I mean, you didn't know it was going to happen. I didn't know that he could even do that. I didn't know that he could just stop in the middle and rest.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what happens is if you're stepping on the wire, it's going to start to swing after a while, and then it would be easy for it to swing too much and knock you off. So you have to stop. But I got nervous every time he went down and then came back up again. I was thinking that's a perfect opportunity to fall.
But you know,
terrifying.
He was so confident about his ability to catch himself on the wire if he fell.
Yeah, that's what he told us when he came in, is that he didn't need a harness or anything like that. He said, I'm just going to grab that wire if I fall. And that didn't seem like much of a backup plan to me.
Well, I didn't realize until the end of it that there was actually a basket on the end of the line that it seemed like they could send out if he did fall and grab the wire to go collect him.
Yeah, they said, what did he say? It would be like 10 or 15 seconds before they'd get to him. It wouldn't be long at all.
Right,
I also
exactly.
I thought it was super interesting that he had a pretty hot wife.
That's what we're all noticing, isn't it? Jesse, thank you for calling. 1-800-520-1067. I got some more tape that I want to play because he's praising Jesus, praising Jesus, praising Jesus until he gets like his eye on the prize. He gets close to the other side. Then he starts giving shout outs, and it's very funny. Plus, I want you to hear his interview as he landed on the other side of the Grand Canyon. But we are taking your calls next, talking about Nick Wallenda here on the Kevin Abine Show. We'll be right back on K-Rock. Ricky, you hold on. Garrett, you too. We're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067 about daredevil Nick Wallenda walking across the high wire over the Grand Canyon above the Little Colorado River yesterday, 1,500 feet in the air. We had this dude on the show about a month ago or so, and he told us he was going to do it, and he did it. Here he is nearing the end of the walk when he starts to get he starts to realize that he's going to make it, and he starts to he starts to give shout-outs from the wire.
Get closer with each step.
Yes, I am. Glory to your name. God, glory to your name.
Still got Jesus
glory,
going,
glory,
though.
Glory, glory.
Looking good. You may encounter some wind that's just a little bit stronger. As you
Nick Wallenda now at the three-quarter mark, just past it, now closing into the finish line.
But thank you for the warning.
By the way, listen to that wind. It's pretty crazy up there, isn't it?
Thank you for Discovery Channel for believing in me.
Thank you for the Discovery Channel.
Standing out there watching, too.
Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus.
I'm good.
Oh, Lord. Thank you, Jesus.
Looking good.
Thank you, Eileen O'Neill and Howard Schwartz.
What?
Edward Sabin. Gretchen, you're awesome. Thank you guys so much for everything you've done.
Now keep paying attention. You're not there yet.
Just trying to distract myself. Thanks, Dad.
Dad is like, you still have another like 40 feet to go on this wire, so maybe not with the celebratory champagne at this point yet, Nick.
Don't get so cocky, kid.
Let's talk to Ricky real quick. Ricky's on line 4. He's got an interesting observation about the show on the Discovery Channel last night. Hi, Ricky. Thanks for calling and holding on. What say you?
What's up, Kevin B and Lisa?
Hello.
What's up, guys? Hey, was anybody else tripping that he was wearing jeans? And not only was he wearing jeans, he was wearing, like, boot cuts or, like, bell bottoms.
Yeah, it was bizarre that he was wearing blue jeans up there, and he was also wearing a Discovery Channel T-shirt, which says to me, how can this guy not get any sponsors? When that Felix Baumgartner was jumping out of that spaceship a couple of months ago, he was head to toe in sponsorships. Nobody wants to step up for Nick Wallenda?
Yeah, the Wallendas don't get love when it comes to sponsors, but, I mean, maybe they'll get a jean sponsor now. But, I mean, they were flapping in the wind. I mean, God forbid, I did not want him to fall, but, I mean, I saw him flapping while he was taking one step over another, and I'm like, that's going to be the death of him.
Yeah, it did seem like a crazy wardrobe choice. You're absolutely right. Why put anything on your body that's going to create any more wind resistance? Like, he should have been up there in tights or something, right?
Well,
or
he's
hairy legs or something at that point would have been just fine.
He's a little chunky. I don't think he would have been comfortable in tights in front of the world. So he probably practices in jeans.
Thanks for the call, Ricky. Appreciate that. Let's go to Garrett real quick. Garrett is on line 1, and he joins us on the Kevin Abine Show. Hi, Garrett. What did you think of Nick Wallenda?
Hey, you know, I thought it was pretty amazing what he was doing, but I was telling my fiance that, I wasn't rooting for him to fall, but I was kind of interested to see if Discovery Channel would actually show him falling.
Well, they told us that they were Nick Wallenda told us that they were putting him on a 10-second delay, which would give them time to switch to an anchor, to switch to one of the, reporters that was standing there. So we probably would not see him fall. But I just wonder, because I thought about that too. I just wonder, how do they train for something like that? I mean, you're standing there covering this stunt, and you expect it's going to go well. But if somebody dies in front of you, and then the camera's on you, and you have to be the one to kind of explain to the world what happened, that'd be tough, wouldn't it?
Get off, 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 get off it, get off it, get off it, get off it.
Maybe so. Do people tune in to something like this? I mean, they tune in not because they want to see him fall, but because they know it's a possibility, right?
Yeah, I think it's that, like, that factor of kind of, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with draws the viewers in.
Would you have been at all interested in it if he had worn a harness?
Not as much.
Yeah.
Kind of would have been one of those things that, you know, you've seen it before type of thing.
Exactly.
But seeing someone small with fall with a harness from that height would still be...
pretty cool.
My heart would stop. Yeah.
Thank you, Garrett. Appreciate the call. Here he is as he got off the rope on the other side of the Grand Canyon yesterday.
Nick Wolanda, ladies and gentlemen, has made history. He is the first human to ever cross the Grand Canyon on a wire. Nick, congratulations.
Thank you.
How are you feeling, man?
Emotional.
I can see that.
Can I get some water? It was way more windy, and the movement of the cable and the sidewalls as I was walking were getting in the way and confusing me as the pendulums were swinging against them. So I'd try to react, and when I reacted, I'd kick that rhythm into the cable, and it took every bit of me to stay focused that entire time. My arms are aching like you wouldn't believe.
There you go. Take a sip of water.
Open this for you. We don't want you to strain those arms any further.
Were you fatigued by halfway point? It looked like you were getting
tired. I was fatigued until I was three quarters of the way all across, and then it was just all adrenaline.
I could tell when you stopped thanking Jesus and started thanking people like the Discovery Channel.
Yes.
You were probably feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah, that was probably a good thought.
And by the way, forget the home viewer. What about your kids seeing you plummet to your death? That's the other thing that was weird. I mean, I don't think boxers put their little kids in the audience to watch them fight in case they get hurt, right?
No. But everyone is so interested in his wife, you can kind of see why he did it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Smart.
I just thought, I mean, there are very few things on TV that are as compelling as watching a guy walk across a wire. I guess I'm glad guys like that are out there doing it so that we have something entertaining to watch. But I every time he does something like this and survives it, like just after Niagara Falls, I hope he's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why push your luck and join the latest in the long line of falling Wanendas who end their life as a result of this stunt? All right, we'll take a quick break. Ralph's got the Showbiz Beat coming back right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. You're Kevin and Bean. Since Kevin is not in today, does that mean he died over the weekend?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
He may have died over the weekend. We cannot confirm or deny. But
He did.
He was scheduled to be out today anyway. Actually, Kevin is on vacation this week. So
dead.
He's missing out. I don't think he's dead,
he's on
Ralph.
Death vacation.
I feel like we would have heard. I think Dave saw him up until last night. He was still alive when Dave left Las Vegas last night. So
that's why the authorities are speaking to Dave as a person of interest. He's the last person to see him alive.
Kevin will be back. He's just on vacation. Right. Ralph is here, though. Time for the Showbiz Beat now on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Quick heads up. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, Hollywood mega producer Jerry Bruckheimer will be getting his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame this morning at 11:30. If you're in the neighborhood, you want to stop by, especially if you're a Johnny Depp fan, because Johnny will be... speaking on Bruckheimer's behalf and presenting.
He made the Pirates movies, right?
He did. He produced all those Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and I believe is also the producer of The Lone Ranger. I can play that on a spoon, you know. I might bring in
we
a spoon
We believe
tomorrow.
You.
No,
we're
really?
Back.
I might bring in
I
a spoon
think we're
tomorrow.
Okay. We got it.
Well, we got a wide open show tomorrow, Ralph. We may need it.
I may be bringing in a little, that's not Flight of the Bumblebees, that's the Green Hornet. William Tell Overture.
Oh, okay.
The name of that classical piece of music. It is a Lone Ranger theme, so maybe breaking that up in the plastic spoon division.
Will the success, we hope, of the Lone Ranger...
The Lone Ranger!
Make people a little bit more open-minded about your Western opus that's coming to theaters.
Western's back, man. It's already back. Lone Ranger.
The Western is back?
Plus or not, Western is back. It's happening. It's happening on television. This fall, you're going to see several Westerns on your major networks. I did a Western that's going to be on Hulu this summer, and Seth's got his Western next year. It's just we're going to be knee-deep in Westerns. Trust
okay.
me. So all's well.
Knee-deep in horse manure, then.
It's good news for old school cowboys like myself who've been waiting to get back into the Western, you know. That's right.
Smells like donkey ass.
That's one of my lines, yeah. Speaking of movies, it is Monday. We take a look at the top 10 movies every Monday morning to see what people went to in their local Cineplexes. And, no surprise here, Monsters University, number one at the box office this weekend. That's what that's what everybody thought was going to be number one, right? Didn't you?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I did. Number two was, by the way, made $82 million. Number two was World War Z, $66 million in its debut. Man of Steel was third with $41.2 million. Then This Is the End, Now You See Me. That's the top five. Fast and Furious 6, The Internship, The Purge, Star Trek Into Darkness, which is $3 million at number nine. And then Iron Man 3 with $2.2 million was number 10 at the box office. Wow, Justin Bieber just cannot stop being a dick.
True dat.
I don't know if you heard about it over the weekend, how he kept that private jet company waiting in Miami.
Now, does this involve another monkey?
Yeah, because of another monkey.
What happened?
Well, he booked a flight on a private jet out of Miami after watching the finals, mm-hmm. the NBA finals.
Well, he's a longtime Heat fan. He had to be there to support his guys.
Sure, absolutely.
Huge Heat fan. Wanted to go wherever was popular.
He shows up, well, it's 11:30, they're scheduled to take off. He shows up 4 hours late.
4 hours?
Yeah. And he gets to the airport, and they go, great, let's go. Let's wheels up, let's go. Load him in, and let's get out of here. He goes, no, we can't go because I don't have my monkey. He's got another monkey now. Another monkey. This monkey was in Palm Beach. He's in Miami. So he had to charter a helicopter to fly him from Miami to Palm Beach so he could pick up his monkey.
What a dumb douchebag.
So then,
how can you tell you have too much money when you're chartering a helicopter to go pick up your monkey?
He comes back 4 hours later with the monkey, and apparently they finally left the ground nine hours after he was originally scheduled.
So this is a crew waiting around for him, essentially. Yeah.
Now, as my buddy Kevin Smith pointed out in Babylon this weekend when we covered this story, he's paying for that time. He pays for the time.
Right.
So they're getting paid. But it is the people, the crew,
it's their lives.
And the pilot who, you know, he's got a certain, you know, schedule and he thinks he's going to be on the clock for a certain amount of time. He's just sitting there waiting for him to chopper around looking for his monkey. And that's not a euphemism. That's literally what he was doing.
I got me a monkey.
So, and who's selling more monkeys to Bieber? I want to know.
Right. He's a terrible pet
he's
owner.
He's a bad monkey owner.
Unless it's going to rip his face off.
No, yeah, it's a why little is cappuccino. It's a little harmless, a little monkey. I mean, that's the only part. Some damage. They could take
the anything I was
off,
looking
maybe.
Forward to too was
it's not a chimp or anything good like that. Yeah. So from that we have this story, where apparently the Las Vegas indoor skydiving company there in Vegas has banned Justin Bieber for life.
Excellent.
He can no longer be a customer there. Wait to hear what he did to them. He shows up with six of his friends just minutes before the place is set to close. All right, they're probably had a long day. They're ready to go home. He comes bounding in the door. We want to do the indoor skydiving. So he and his six friends all suit up, and they do the skydiving. Place stays open for him, and the guy who owns the place comes up to him and says, look, time to settle up. You owe us this amount of money, or in lieu of that, you can just post an Instagram picture of yourself mid-flight with a favorable comment about the joint, you know, a little publicity, and we'll call it even.
Mm-hmm. That's him. Sounds like a pretty good deal for Bieber.
So Bieber says, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And pretended to post a Instagram shot and walked out without paying.
And asshole!
Didn't do the Instagram, didn't pay the fee, didn't tip the staff that stayed open, keep the place open late for him, nothing.
Wow.
On top of it, Justin and his team were, according to source, a disrespectful bunch, including reportedly dirtying up the bathroom. Made a mess around the sink, threw the paper towels on the ground directly while looking at an employee. Said it was
they're just pigs.
A horrible, horrible experience.
I've heard that he is a real jerk.
I say they should volunteer to take him skydiving for real. Take him on a plane. And
pretend
then
to put him in a parachute.
Pretend to put a parachute in his backpack.
You know how you pretended to Instagram the photo? Well, we're going to pretend to give you a
fill
parachute.
His backpack full of monkeys. And when he pulls the ripcord, all the monkeys would come out.
Murder.
Why? What's? How? Who? Come
yep.
on,
Ralph. Exactly. That's my point. Mm. Today's celebrity birthdays: drummer Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac is 66 years old today. Actor Peter Weller. He was on Dexter. Did a real good job on that show. That's coming back soon. He was also RoboCop, of course, 66 years old. Kurt Smith of the band Tears for Fears is 52.
You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and down.
What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Is that supposed to be funny?
Yes, that was Mugs being funny.
That was Mugs being funny?
That was not
that was not me being funny as much as it was Bean.
Well, that was actually Mug's idea, but I signed off on it because I thought because Ralph is expecting a song called Shout, let's give him
Jesus.
One. So you got a two for there.
God, it's
brutal.
Only Monday.
How about you guys don't team up on comedy hilarity any longer, all right? How about you just... Mindy Kaling is 34 years old today. Model Petra Nemkova is 34. Actress Minka Kelly is 33. And Solange Knowles is 27 years old today. It's going to be a long week.
I know.
We're going to be envying Bean in his death soon, Lisa. That's what I'm predicting. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. And thanks to Janae Marin from Los Angeles. Just won tickets to see 9-Inch Nails at Staples Center. That show is on November the 8th. Tickets are going on sale this Friday morning at 10. She is also qualified to win a private helicopter ride to the show, with parachute, by the way, a suite at the JW Marriott, and the best seats in the house. We got tickets for you all this week on K-Rock. We do the grand prize drawing here on Friday morning. If you missed Trent Reznor from 9-Inch Nails on the show earlier today, that'll be up shortly at KRock.com. You can check out the interview. Tomorrow on the program, Ralph, Petros Papadakis is going to be here talking about a show called The Bachelorette.
He will be helping me discuss a show called The Bachelorette. If that's what you mean, that's goddamn right.
Also, with all the controversy about the unusual name North in the news, that Kim and Kanye named their baby North, tomorrow we want to be looking for people who also have one-of-a-kind, made-up, your-parents-hate-you names.
Yes.
I bet there are a lot of people in this city who've got them, so, don't you think?
Chlamydia, feel free to call in. We'd love to talk to you.
That'll be tomorrow morning on the Kevin Beach Show.
Sphincter Plus, Smith, if you're out there, we'd love to talk to you.
Plus, UFC legend Chuck Liddell will be here, too. It's all tomorrow morning right here on a brand new Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.